Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chin. Oh, it feels good to be back. We had to take a small break last week. I know a lot of folks were asking us and hitting us up, asking what's going on, why you guys are not on the air. I know everybody believes that we're robots and, you know, we function like a machine, but we do get tired and we do burn out and we have to kind of just take a step back and just gather ourselves. So that's basically what me and Gabriel did. We had to just gather ourselves back together and just go, you know, we give so much of ourselves to this radio and we get burned out, man. A lot of people don't know how hard it is to do a radio show, you know, making sure that we bring guests that are going to not only entertain, but bring value to the show and to make sure that we're as honest, an honest of a show that we're able to do. And I'm being texted by Gabriel saying he's on, but I don't see him on there. Anyways, so sometimes it just gets you know, we need to, you know, look back and, oh, here we are. All right, Gabe. I wasn't sure who that was, man, you know.
I was trying out my new, I got a new Skype hookup here and a little headphone action. Hopefully the fans can hear me. You know, the listeners can hear me a little better than using my iPhone. But they'll be recognizing the number, so I'm just going to sit
down. I was going to say, I was looking for the norm of the number that you normally call in, but I couldn't see it. But I look at you moving up in the world with your Skype.
I know, with the headphones and everything.
I know, look at that, man. It's starting to look like a real host, huh? Hey, a lot of boxing stuff that we need to talk. We got to catch up. Definitely, we had a fun past week of boxing. Really surprised that we had back-to-back exciting fights, you know, from the heavyweight division all the way up to Khan and Garcia. Man, it was good. It was fun, you know, and we apologize that we didn't come on Thursday because it was a hot topic. A lot of listeners were ready to come on, you know, Leaving the Ring and talk about what went down on that Saturday night, which is, you know, I can kind of consider it was a special Saturday night because none of the fights really disappointed, you know. And then this past weekend we had Broner and Escobedo. This coming up week we got Robert Guerrero. Hey, we got 50 Cent and Oscar De La Hoya to talk about, you know, their little Twitter beef. And 50 Cent, you know, giving out the hint that he might turn a rapper to promoter. So a lot of things, you know. I want to go first. Let's jump back. Let's go 2 weeks back and let's talk David Haye and Derek Chisora, and let's find out Gabriel's thoughts and fight fans. You want to call in 347-215-7598, you certainly can. Let's talk here 3 hours of boxing talk on Leaving the Ring, you know. And I appreciate everybody, too, from our last, you know, show with the interviews. You know, a lot of folks hitting us up and showing their major support, man. We get a lot of support from the listeners about our radio show, you know, and we just want to thank everybody. Every time you guys tune in and every time you guys write us an email and every time you hit us up on Facebook or Twitter, we're appreciative, you know. We at least know that there is somebody out there that appreciates our work and there's somebody out there that looks forward to hearing us every Thursday night. So let's go with Gabriel, man. What were your thoughts about it? Hey, I did read a couple of your tweets of what you thought. You were thinking, okay, let's see Vitaly Klitschko up against David Haye. But it's been 2 weeks. We've been able to kind of really settle in on our thoughts of what we think David Haye should do next.
Well, you know, I've always said that David Haye, he brings an excitement that the division needs, that the heavyweight division meat. He's in the regular size heavyweight. He's not, you know, super size like either of the Klitschko brothers. And most people don't give them their credit because of the fact that they're so gigantic. They're like, ah, well, they're huge, and that's the only reason they win. That's another issue. I don't agree with that at all. Looking at the fight, Paige Azora, I don't understand. There was a lot of people that said, I wasn't that impressed. He was all right. Maybe I'm just a guy dying of thirst in the heavyweight division, which is a desert wasteland. But to me, it was an exciting fight. I was riveted. It had drama. I didn't know. I was one of the people that was saying it was a good fight, and I had no problem with it going on. I thought the British Boxing Board of Control, or the Boxing British Board of the BBBOC, they had issues with the fight. I thought they were unwarranted. Yeah, they got their huge fight and the brawl and everything. It was terrible. I got news for you. People don't look at our sport as necessarily clean. How this was the detriment of our sport, I don't really understand it. Never did, never will. I loved the fight. I thought it was really fun. It showed that David Haye had some toughness in it, but he redeemed himself by stepping in there and staying in there with Chisora, having to make adjustments, but not turning and running and pot-shotting like I kind of thought he was going to do, but instead staying in the pocket, letting his hands go in combination, and eventually that paid off and dropped him with a beautiful left hook, finished it off soon after that, and to me, it was legitimate. It was a legitimate heavyweight contender, guy that had put up a good fight against Vitaly Klitschko, a person that many people think would just absolutely cream David Haye, and Chisora stayed with that guy. And David Haye, he knocked that guy out in an exciting fight. But to me, it is just, I really wish we could, nothing against the Klitschko's, but kind of move them off to the side and make a bunch of fights, like Haye versus Areola, Haye with Adamant, Haye versus Povetkin. That would be a really fun fight. A good friend of mine, a friend of our show, Julian Cassin, said that would be something that would probably will happen, and it seemed like a likely scenario to him. But, you know, as it's looking now, the manager for Vitaly Klitschko is basically saying that Vitaly accepts the challenge and that David Haye really only wants, you know, Adam Booth, the David Haye guy, said afterwards, look, we only want Vitaly. We're not really interested in anybody else. It's the biggest fight out there. And rightly so. Vitaly has to get through, you know, Manuel Char, and then he's got the political campaign in the Ukraine in October. Somewhere towards the end of the year or early next year, I would say that, hey, Vitaly Klitschko goes down. And it's going to be a fun fight. I've always felt that, hey, has a style to trouble Vitaly. Those old legs, the awkwardness, it's going to start to work against him at some point. He is 87 years old. So, you know, I think that's the fight that's going to happen. I think it's a good fight, and I'm picking Haye to win it.
I'm not sure if I'm going to jump on saying that David Haye can win it. Because, you know, I think David Haye understands his capabilities. I think David Haye kind of understands when he can open up, when he can exchange combinations. And we saw that with his last fight with Derek. He was a much shorter guy and a much stockier guy, and it was easier to close the distance with. And with Vitaly Klitschko, I can't picture David Haye daring to be that great or daring to try to get, you know, take a risk the way he did. And that's why I kind of say that for Vitaly Klitschko, who I've always kind of viewed him more as the older brother with more of a killer instinct than his younger brother. His younger brother to me always kind of seemed that he's content of just using his jab and using his boxing skills, where Vitaly to me seemed more of a guy that wants to get the job done, wants to get you out of there, and a bit wants to be a little bit more impressive than his younger brother, because the fact that so many fans and so many writers view Vladimir to be the more gifted fighter out of the two. So I do think it's a great fight, but I can't seem to sway or believe that David Haye can take the fight away from Vitaly Klitschko. I would say Vitaly Klitschko beats him on the scorecards, and that's just because of the fact that David Haye wouldn't even take the risk of trying to exchange with the older guy, like you said, who has a bad knee, who has a bad shoulder, whose body's been betraying him, and he's a much older fighter. But I don't think David Haye wants to find out how old of a fighter Vitaly Klitschko is. We'll have to find out. Anyways, Fight Fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. You certainly can here on Leaving the Ring. 3 hours of boxing talk. Let's pass it to some Fight Fans really quick, Gabriel. You know, who wants to talk boxing here on Leaving the Ring? Let's get let's go with CT, who wants to talk Broner Escobedo and Robert Guerrero. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, man. How you doing?
Pretty good. I watched the fight last weekend. I really thought what Adrian Broner did was very unprofessional. I felt bad for Escobedo. You know, he kind of got just thrown into the lion's den, you know what I mean? Even
right.
though, you know, it was for a title. And, you know, I want to see Broner fight somebody on a higher level. I definitely want to see him in there with maybe like a Hammer and Hake Mundy, or I think that's a good matchup. Or maybe the winner out of Molina versus DeMarco. But as for the fight itself, I just think he was way too strong for Escobedo. Nothing Escobedo would have did that night would have done anything to Broner. It was the case. He's too big, too strong. As far as comparisons to Mayweather, I just think defensively he's pretty gifted, but offensively I can see like a lot of flaws. I don't think his reflexes are as good as Mayweather's. I don't think his punch selection is as good. I think he's very flat-footed at times. I think he's a pretty good boxer, but I think he's definitely going to get tested as soon as he steps up to these weight classes where the guys are around his size or if not bigger. I think he's definitely going to get tested at lightweight, if not more at junior welterweight.
Absolutely. You know, the thing about this, look, and I felt for Escobedo. Trust me, I did. But at the same time, I didn't feel for him. And I'm going to tell you why. The one reason I didn't was because of the fact that he took the fight after knowing that he was going to be outweighed. You know, he took money. So do you feel bad for him? Of course you feel bad for him. But at the same time, you kind of look at the bank account and go, well, I don't feel that bad. I mean, he kind of walked into the fire. You know, it's just like the guy that knows there's a burning building but still goes in sight. You know, you're going to get burned. And that's what happened with Escobedo. Now, was Broner unprofessional? Absolutely was unprofessional. But here's the thing, is that he was unprofessional. He knew he was unprofessional. And we still tuned in to watch him. So whose bad is it really? Is it him or is it the fans who decided to tune in to watch him and allow him to make a circus out of our sport? We got to slap ourselves too here, you know. It's not we can't all put it on just
true.
One person, you know. We got to slap ourselves because we allowed him to make a circus out of our sport. And at the same time, Escobedo allowed that circus to continue when he could have done the right thing and say, "You know what? I'm not going to do it, even though I got a new child on the way and I got this. I'm not going to take the fight." But hey, money talks, and we all know the rest. Gabe,
can you hear me now?
Hear you great.
All right. It's a weird situation. You know, I thought that Broner, and I've liked Broner. You know, we've talked about him on the show a lot. I've covered him since before he was on TV. Although I'm getting kind of tired of having to qualify every time I give an opinion on a guy, but it's just because people go, oh, you just hate him because he's black and he's rich and he's outspoken. No, that has nothing to do with it, actually. He could be polka dot, and what he did this weekend was really unprofessional. You know, not making weight twice, that was unprofessional. I didn't really care for him coming in wearing the Free Money May T-shirt. That was very misguided. I mean, I know his controversy sells, but at some point, have a modicum of integrity and decency about you. The guy's in jail for domestic violence. He's not in jail for, you know, political reasons. So don't make him a political prisoner. And it's not really a laughing matter. So if you were doing it as a joke, it was tasteless too. And then, the post-fight proposal to the girlfriend, she didn't know, the mother didn't know. Broner actually said this, so don't get all, oh, she was probably in on it. No, she actually wasn't. And he kind of humiliated a woman on TV. And, yeah, maybe it's all in good fun, but I don't know. Ask her privately how she felt about it. She's probably not that happy about it. And I mean, just all in all, you know, Broner kind of proves that you shouldn't look to athletes to be role models. A guy that says, you know, come on, man, I'm not ready for marriage, and yet he has four kids at the age of 22, kind of shows you how he sees the world in a very skewed, very entitled, in a very not very realistic way. It's like he's been a prized athlete his whole life, and rules have been bent for him probably his whole life. And that's why he acts like that, because we allow him to, not just we, but everybody around him allowed him to get away with it probably his whole life. They paid off money. And I heard, you know, Al Haymon was very instrumental, his advisor, in making sure, just kept raising the money. Escobedo's people did the right thing. We're going to sit down and we're going to wait until the largest amount of money we can get out of this, and then sure, we'll send our guy in. Was it right? No, but it's kind of how the system works. And Escobedo was put in a position of not getting paid with a brand new baby on the way that he hasn't seen. And it's not his fault, but the onus was on him. I thought he did absolutely the right thing in taking that money, taking as much as he could take, and getting out of there. Did we get to see him have that realization during that interview? Absolutely. He kind of sold out his first title shot for that, you know, for extra money, because the other guy didn't want to play by the rules. It was, to use an internet word, bullshit, you know, and we got to watch it. And Keith Thurman, people, I don't know what you guys were smoking, but please send some over, because I don't want to see him on my TV again. And the people that were telling me that I was crazy, I'm like, seriously, pass that over, because it must be some wonderful shit. Because, not that good of a fighter. Should look very rusty. How did he go from a 15-month layoff to my television? Ask that question. Were we that high on him before he left the sport that we were dying for his comeback and we needed to see him on a cable date? No. But we got to see it anyways. People that keep saying that Al Haymon doesn't have influence in the sport, really? Are you sure? Yeah, all in all, it was just, ugh.
No, I agree with you 100%, especially what you said about the Floyd Mayweather t-shirt. I was thinking the same exact shit.
I don't know what nationality you are, ethnicity you are, but to me, you know, he could be a Mexican guy doing this,
right?
It's just, to me, I'm like, man, don't represent our people like that. We're much smarter than that. We're much more educated than that. When you get to the big show like that, represent. Not just, I'm not really a racial guy, but just represent your sport. You know, you're on the biggest stage possible, and you're acting the fool. Why is that cool?
I think his arrogance is definitely going to get him beat, though. I think he, you know, he underlooks every fighter just about he fights, and with De Leon, he almost paid for it. I think definitely when he goes up to the lightweight division, he's definitely going to pay for that arrogance.
We hope he would pay for that arrogance. I mean, we're going to find out. I mean, that's the thing. Let's take this back. I mean, how many fighters have been getting away with a lot of things they shouldn't be getting away with in this sport, you know? And I always go back, and only way we can defend these actions is that we got to point the finger at somebody. And at the end of the day, who do you point that finger at? Ourselves, the consumers, the guys that sit down and watch these fights. You know, we're the ones that allow this. We're the ones that allow these guys to make a mockery of our sport, make it a circus. And I don't know about you guys, I don't know about you, CT, but I'm really getting kind of tired of it, getting kind of sick of it, you know? I mean, we got, what are these, fighters or are they clowns? I didn't pay to go to the circus, pay to see warriors get in the ring and duke it out. I didn't pay for a guy to, you know, go up two weight classes, three weight classes, and then try to propose to his girlfriend and make fun of her. I didn't pay for none of that. You know
what it reminds me of is watching, and if people are listening on Twitter, tell me if my microphone sounds muffled now. I'm adjusting the settings per your instructions. It reminds me of Chad Johnson. Is it Chad Johnson? Ocho Cinco. Well, it's been so long since he had a real name, I forgot it. But Ocho Cinco, and like every week, once you realize that people would react to him doing something new for a touchdown, and all these guys doing some new celebration for a touchdown, the bar had to be raised every week. You know, some guy's got a cell phone hidden in the end zone. Some other guy's got some other thing. Where's Broner going next? He's already done all the things that Floyd has done, besides, you know, beat up women. But, like, in terms of fighting, you know, choking a guy at the weigh-in, immediately Broner's next fight, he did that. He's missed weight, just like Floyd did with Marquez. And then he didn't, you know, but he always kind of one-ups Floyd a little bit. He didn't make weight on the second one. And he just let other people, like, negotiate it, and, like, just completely got away with it. He kind of mimics Floyd in all the worst possible ways. And then he goes in the ring and acts like him, too, but a little more aggressively. He's more like welterweight Floyd, the way he fights, than he is younger Floyd. Younger Floyd was, like, multiple combinations and lightning fast and was actually fairly aggressive himself, but... You got to wonder, what's the next one? Since he got away with it, he didn't lose an HBO date. Probably didn't lose any of the money that he made for the fight. And I don't really denigrate him on that point too much, because unlike Amir Khan, who made like almost $1 million, I'm pretty sure they didn't have to give away more than half the tickets to the Cincinnati show. Broner actually does sell there. He is a legit draw. But it's just the behavior. And the bottom line is, we're going to end up talking about him. And somebody had said to me earlier this week, it was in the industry, it was like, you know what you guys should do? I almost thought about it, but, you know, we're a news source in a sense, and I think we should talk about it. But they said, just don't talk about him. That's what he wants you to do. It just drives controversy. Guys write articles about it, like, nonstop. You notice I don't write as many articles as often as other people. I try not to be married to the – I also have the benefit of having Steve Kim, who will be a guest on the show later. He writes fairly regularly and covers a lot of things. I try not to be a slave to the 24-hour news cycle, like a lot of guys are, because they write things that aren't really news, but they need to write something, so they write just any old thing, you know. And a lot of this, I mean, you see opinion pieces up to Yang this week about Adrian Broner and his behavior. The bottom line is he's not going to change. Why would he? You know, we keep talking about it. Everybody seems to love the guy. HBO is going to keep him on, and certainly he's going to get another belt. So we're kind of stuck with him. My only hope is that he actually fights somebody at 140 or 147, which is really where he belongs. I think he'll make another kind of trinket pit stop at 135, and I don't think anybody there could physically challenge him, to be perfectly honest. DeMarco's got good skills, but he's not going to physically challenge him. The guy that's really missing, and, you know, he's the granddaddy of all, I guess, you know, female abusers, is Edwin Valero. He would have been a legitimate problem for anybody at 140. And I don't know about welterweight, but 140 and 135, that would have been his territory.
Right.
That guy was unbelievable when I saw him fight DeMarco that time. I really didn't see any of his fights. I just looked at the heart that he had from, you know, catching that elbow, fighting through the whole thing. And the guy has punching power like crazy. I enjoyed watching him that night. If I could talk about the Guerrero fight this weekend, I'm really looking forward to this fight. I think it's going to be great. I think Aiden, he's a very he's more of a shell type defensive fighter, and he comes out with these hooks. He's very powerful. But I think Guerrero's overall skill level, he could just keep to the basics, which I think Guerrero's like one of the best boxers I think in boxing. I think his arsenal of punches is just one of the best. I think he's very fundamentally sound. I think he throws a variety of punches, and I think his skill level will just get him the win this weekend. But I think it's going to be a very tough fight if he doesn't, keep to the game plan.
He's in a really tough fight. I mean, if we kind of lay everything out on the table, he's been off due to a shoulder injury. This is his first time fighting in a much bigger weight class, and he's really fighting the guy that Adrian has taken it as a disrespect move from Guerrero, challenging him for his title. So Guerrero, in a lot of ways, being in his hometown, he's up against a lot with a guy that can crack and a guy that is not going to just hand him the belt. Guerrero's got to be in tip-top shape. He's got to be in true form. He definitely cannot afford to have any ring rust at all. I'm really interested in seeing how he performs Saturday night. I mean, really, really interested. There's a huge possibility that Guerrero may not be successful because he has been pushed back by smaller men, even though with Michael Casidas. But, pressure the way Michael Casidas, we're talking about a smaller guy. Adrian's not a small guy. So it's interesting.
It is exactly what we always talked about. You know, Guerrero's managers would call in, or his manager or his publicist would call in, and, you know, he should fight Floyd Mayweather and this and that and the other thing. And I'd always say, well, I want to see you at welterweight or even 140 to even know. And this weekend we're going to find out. This is like the ultimate prognostication, because we have no data on Robert Guerrero at 140 or 147. We don't know anything about him other than what we've heard in the gym. I've heard he looks very good, but a lot of people look good in the gym and sparring. You know, there's all kinds of factors as to why that is, but we're going to see. Selkirk Aydin is a tough, hard-nosed guy. He's going to come forward. He's going to be behind that shield. He's going to pressure all night long. Is he going to fight out of character? That's going to be something interesting. Is he going to be a little more aggressive, a little more reckless than he normally would, or is he going to, which I already suspect just in his behavior and him not wanting to talk to the press, that he's going to have the arrogance of, I'm a champion and you need to come to me, and not realize that, yo, you're in somebody else's hometown. It doesn't really matter what belt you came in with. When the bell rings, the lead promoter's Golden Boy and you're at his home place. You better fight like you're the challenger. That's going to be interesting to see. I have a feeling it's going to be a close fight. It's going to go the decision, and Guerrero is going to have himself a belt, and Golden Boy will have a new player in the division. Is Marty Dangle?
But not know what to
fight?
Do with it.
Yeah.
But not know what to do with it. Unfortunately, yeah. CT, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother.
Great
thanks
call,
for calling.
CT. Thank you, man. Good talking. That's
my
man,
you want to call in? You want to talk boxing here on 3 hours of Boxing Talk on Leaving the Ring? Your Sharks on the Boxing Radio, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. Hey, you know what? When you talked about Keith Thurman, I mean, I don't know, bro. I even put it up on Facebook. I thought it was an entertaining fight. The only thing that I could say about the kid was that I thought he was just throwing out his load a little too quick. To me, it seemed like a guy that wanted to overly impress. Has a lot of flaws, needs to go back, settle down, look at exactly what he did wrong, because he was gassing out. And I said if he didn't get past that sixth round, he was going to be in deep, deep water to a possibility of having an upset in his hand. So I kind of like the kid. I don't know, you know. But then again, there's particular fighters out there that I do enjoy that people didn't like. I mean, Timothy Bradley's one of them. A lot of folks don't like Timothy Bradley, and I enjoy watching Timothy Bradley, you know. But going back with Robert the Ghost Guerrero, exactly what you said about Aydin, about the fact that he may have that arrogance of, you know, I'm the champion. And so far, what we've heard or seen of him, that's pretty much the swagger he's bringing to this fight in San Jose at the HB Pavilion. I think that he may either fall into that little trap of thinking, I don't have to do much, and you're going to have to come to me. And if that's the case, I don't think he's going to be disappointed, though, Gabriel. I think Robert is going to go to him. Even though we kind of picture Robert as being a much superior boxer, he's very talented. The kid has a long, decorated amateur career. I think that Robert really wants to prove to people that he is 147. And he should have that golden shot at the golden goose of the sport, which is Floyd Mayweather Jr. I think his mind is set on that. And I think that with that mind frame could get him in trouble, Aydin. I don't know.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's going to be how well does he take that punch? How well does he handle carrying that much weight, moving around at 147? And who knows what he's going to weigh on fight night? Is he going to be in the 150s? That's a lot of extra weight to be carrying in a live 12-round fight, especially when you've been off for quite some time, trying to work that shoulder back into place. There's just a lot of factors here for me that it's, you know, I'm not choosing. A lot of people are asking me my opinion. I haven't quite given it yet. I mean, he hasn't fought since April of last year. That was against Michael Katsidis. And to me, that performance by Guerrero was his most complete. But it was Michael Katsidis, who's only a few fights really away from pretty much being effectively retired. I know they're announcing a possibility of him fighting Mike Alvarado. We'll see how that fight goes. I don't want to say anything that jeopardizes it, but, I mean, he's just coming off a knee injury that was pretty legitimate, Michael Katsidis, and now they're talking about him fighting in September against a gigantic junior welterweight in Mike Alvarado, where he's really going to be cannon fodder. So that's your best performance. Certainly wasn't the Casamayor fight where you did well early, then you got dropped late. Escobedo fight, I could say that fight was another really solid fight by Robert, but he also went the distance again, and these are 135-pound fights. This is a welterweight fight against a guy with a lot of pride. He's got decent power. He's undefeated, and he's got the belt. This is his chance to get into the big time, too. He's been wanting this for a long time. He's wanted a piece of Andre Berto for a long time, and they wouldn't fight him. And there's a reason why they wouldn't fight him. So I think, you know, if Guerrero gets through this and wins legitimately, then he's a legitimate guy at 147. It's a real fight. It's, you know, I'm talking about the fight like I don't like it, but I really like the fight. I think, you know, I'm excited by it because he's going to be very much challenged.
This is a fight, honestly. This is a fight that honestly that his promoter should have been on top of. When we talk about matchmaking at its best, and a guy that was calling to move up in weight, a guy that says, look, test me, I want to fight the best. Allow me to show that I want to be up there in the escalon of being the best. This was a fight that a promoter should have been throwing in on billboards, you know, throwing them everywhere, radios, you name it. And guess what? It is completely silent in San Jose, California. It's silent. I honestly don't think it's going to be – I mean, not honestly, it's not going to be a sold-out event, unfortunately. You know, and we're going to be calling in our next guest right now, but – We'll talk a little bit about that with Steve Kim when he comes on. I don't even know why we call him a guest. He's more he's almost like a host when he comes on leaving the ring. But
He's family.
We're going to be in Oxnard, California, doing a live broadcast. broadcast.
A live butt crack. Wow.
Butt crack. Yeah, the Extreme Boxing Gym in Oxnard, California. It's going to be the first time we've ever done it, and hopefully everybody else enjoys it. We're going to have live interviews, meaning that the fighter is going to be sitting there with us while we're doing the interview. Be sure to tune in. We're going to be out there on Thursday. If you're in Oxnard, California, or anywhere close, hey, come on down to the gym, man. Hang out with us. Let's talk boxing. 3 hours of boxing talk, and let's get Mr. Steve Kim with us, the canine. See if he answers. Hopefully he doesn't hang up on us. Bueno, what's the luck with Steve Kim?
Hold on, Vato. What's going on?
Good, man. How you doing, brother?
I am doing well. Glad to be on with you guys.
Fantastic. Hey, really, let me ask you. Let's start this off. What do you think the attendance is going to be like for Robert the Ghost Guerrero in the HB Pavilion?
You know, it's interesting, guys. People have spoken about this, and this is something that I always try to monitor. If you look at the last several HBO Showtime cards that Golden Boy has done, and these are off commission reports that are public record, it's amazing. If you go back to the Home Depot show, June 1st, you look at the Con Garcia fight, and there's one other fight that I'm missing. They've had cards where they've actually given away more comp tickets than they've sold.
Right.
And I think that's an alarming trend, and you know that's the way you ruin markets in a lot of ways. My guess is, and I haven't really kept tabs on this, but based on the fight that I went to a couple of years ago when Robert Guerrero called it a day against that Indonesian fighter whose name escapes me right now.
Duan Air Yordan,
yes. I would say that there's going to be a paid of about 3,000 to 4,000.
Hmm.
What do you think, Dave? You're up there. You have more of a pulse than I do. I think you're going to be up there. What's your guess?
I think you're right. I mean, I was just saying that right now. I mean, I was saying how silent, how quiet it is in the Bay Area about this fight. And, you know, like I was telling Gabriel, when fight fans want to see a real fight, I think we got a real fight with Guerrero and Adrian. And I'm just really surprised that his promoter didn't jump on that and kind of push that. This is a big test for Robert the Ghost Guerrero, especially in his hometown. I mean, you know, when fans want to see their hometown fighter fight and be in a real fight, I think that the marketing should be, hey, he's in a real fight. You need to come out and see whether or not he can make an accomplishment and jump up in weight and do something to make some noise at a new division. I don't see any of that. I don't see the billboard.
I agree with you. This is a real fight. I'm picking Guerrero. But I think it's a real fight. If Guerrero cannot control distance, and he's only really done it one fight where he's consistently on the outside with his long stick on the front side, that was against Katsidis. Hayden is a natural welterweight. He has struggled with southpaws before, like JoJo Dan. But I think it's a real fight. He's a big, strong, rough guy. And if his airspace is breached, Guerrero, I think it's a dogfight. I really do. It's a good fight. I actually think the Sean Porter Alfonso Gomez fight has a chance to be very entertaining. But it's been proven, and I've talked about this with Kathy Duba numerous times, there's a couple of things that you need when you do a local promotion. Number one is geographic logic in placing a fight in a certain venue. Then you got to have pricing of the tickets be proper. But you also got to promote the thing. See, it's not just enough to set up a lemonade stand and say, hey, we got lemonade. I mean, you got to market. You got to hit the pavement running. You got to put posters out there. You have to put in some local advertising with the radio stations, making sure that the media is taken care of. There are a lot of elements in terms of promoting. To me, there's way too much TV packaging going on by many of these so-called promoters that is just about getting a license fee and making the fight and taking the money off the top. I mean, think about it, guys. Most fights nowadays don't even do fight posters, and that used to be a staple. And I've seen local promoters who do flyers, who do pamphlets, who actually do fight posters. They'll do some guerrilla marketing out on the streets. And it's amazing that these guys at the ground floor level, grassroots of boxing, will actually work harder for a lot less money than some of the supposed major league, big league promoters that we see on a consistent basis.
Do you think we're hitting a point of critical mass with a lot of different issues in this sport? You've got, you know, guys are drug testing positive like left and right. A lot of things are going on crazy in the Olympics already. People are withdrawing because of the new drug tests they're using. But then you've got this seismic shift with Showtime, where they've become, you know, the Heyman boy, you know, meets Showtime. They're not what they used to be at all. HBO seems to be giving us a bunch of crap as well. Do you think we're hitting a point where we can't survive continuing to act this way, the age of the TV packager or the network programmer that worries more about his relationships than good fights? Or are we just going to continue like this?
You know, I think it's a stretch that's been very dubious. I'm not a guy that's an alarmist. I'm not like that guy that thinks any one thing ruins or kills boxing.
Right.
You know, like Larry Merchant said it best the week after the Bradley Pacquiao fight. He says, nothing's going to kill boxing, nothing's going to really save it. And I've thought that for quite a while. But I do think there are issues that we have to hit as the media. That number one, the network alliances that are being formed with the various promoters. I think one of the biggest issues, in addition to the whole subject of drug testing, which you've hit very well, Gabe, that's always going to be there. Every athlete or every sport is going to have a certain percentage of people that are going to try to bend the rules. I think it's at this point that the legislators or the administrators, like the Nevada State Athletic Commission, see, we've got it backwards. We have individual fighters and promoters trying to change the template. When that's not their job, it's not the job of the promoter to say, wow, we should do this. It's the job of the people in charge of putting on the events from an administrative standpoint. Kathy Duba says to me one time, see, why should that be my job? I play within whatever rules they want to set up. So the people that set up the rules, they have to be more stringent. And Bob Arum's taking that tack, saying, you know what, I'm all for extra testing or more difficult set of standardized testing procedures. But the problem is I will not do it without the backing of the local commissions, because then you start working into gray areas about what exactly are the protocols to deal with. I mean, a couple of failed drug tests that ruin fights, and then everyone all of a sudden stepped back and said, wait a minute, if we catch people, the problem is these events may not go on. So then it became a case of be careful what you wish for.
Right.
The other issue in terms of the alliance, that's critical than anything. I still say that one of the that in the state is Cold War, Golden Boy, and Top Rank, because now we're past the Bay of Pig stage. This Cold War, now we have nuclear missiles being launched. And it's like I've said this before, it's spy versus spy. And I think there's too many times you can go within a lot of divisions that you're not getting the best fights on HBO and Showtime that you can get in boxing. What you're getting is the best fight that either Top Rank or Golden Boy can make within their own stable.
Right.
And to me, that's a problem. I'm not saying there's not good fights within the stables of both companies. There are. But Mara's Donaire is just one example
mm-hmm.
of at least 20 where I say to myself, you know, we can't even have a discussion on this matchup because it's a non-starter. And I've said this for a while. I think we have to put pressure on both networks, HBO and Showtime, to leverage their financial deep pockets to say, listen, guys, to say to a guy like Donaire, Nonito, we've given you a lot of soft touches these last 36 rounds. Going into the future, if you don't want to fight Rigondo, you better fight a guy like Abner Morris. And to Abner Morris, you could say, you know what, we've given you Eric Morrell, and we'll give you probably one more soft touch, right? But if you don't want to fight Anselmo Moreno, you better fight Nonito Donaire. I mean, think about it, guys. That example to me is acute because for Donaire and Morris, that fight makes sense in every single way. It's commercially the best fight. I think stylistically it's a very good fight, but you can't make it. So I think that is an issue that has hit a critical stage because what we're seeing, Gabe, as you mentioned, if one network decides to plant its shop or plant its flag with one company, in essence what you're getting is a certain league of boxing on that particular network.
Mm-hmm. You think, Steve, though, with this Cold War, that it's kind of benefit to certain fighters. And for instance, I mean, I've heard fighters nowadays just point the finger automatically to the promoter, and that's why we don't really see them kind of griping and calling, you know, and scratching away of trying to make these fights happen.
Steve, you're absolutely right. When I heard Brandon Reyes, of all guys, who used to be a guy that I would thought was like, you know, that old fighter that used to walk into the bar and say, I'll look any SOB in the house. I don't care who you're with, what weight division, I'll fight anybody.
Right.
When a guy like him says, yeah, I'd fight such and such. Oh, yeah, but he's with Golden Boy. I said, uh-oh, we got a problem.
Right.
Because when fighters are now buying into that mindset and using it as a built-in excuse, we have a problem. We do, because if you want to see certain fights, and he doesn't want to fight Mike Alvarado, but there's other fights between 135 and 140 with guys like Marcos Maidana, Lucas Matisse, or Adrian Broner that we can't even discuss. That is a problem. And I wrote this on Twitter a couple of days ago. Theoretically, in a perfect world, the fighters and promoters work together in conjunction with each other. I think the fighters have to take more ownership of this situation now and tell a Bob Arum or Richard Schaefer, I don't care if you guys are battling like the Bloods and the Crips. I want this fight. Because you have to understand, the promoters and the managers have a much longer shelf life in this business than any fighter. They could do this theoretically for 30, 40, 50 years. Bob Arum's been in this for like four decades, right? A fighter's prime earning stage, when he becomes a prospect to a guy that comes right into his physical prime, usually, you know, if you're really lucky and you're really good, it's about 5 or 6 years where you get to make your best amount of money. Now you're fighting twice a year. So think about it. You get maybe 10 to 15 opportunities to really make the high-end upper echelon money. And sometimes you have to make that decision, like, where am I going here?
Right.
So I don't want those fights and those dates squandered with Brandon Reels fighting Richie A. Brill. I would love to see Lucas Matisse against some of these guys like Mike Alvarado. Just think that's another one that we could never discuss, and it is up to the fighters to say, I want those fights and demand them, and B, the networks to say, you know what, you're right, those are the only fights we want, you two need to get along, or neither of you are getting these dates.
Hmm. Yeah, when did HBO and Showtime become ESPN2? I mean, Keith Thurman, that was an ESPN2 fight.
You know what's funny?
You know what I mean? It just
Thurman
was.
I've talked about 20 people in boxing, and we you know a lot of these guys, but people in boxing that make their living in boxing, who I have a great amount of respect for their knowledge, who are in the gym on almost a daily basis or dealing with fighters. I'm talking trainers, matchmakers, managers, and fighters. I've not heard one guy that thinks Keith Thurman can fight. Literally, the HBO crew seems to be the three people on this earth that thought Keith Thurman looked anything like more than just a suspect. And you're right, but when the tail wags the dog the way Al Haymon does it, and the standards are relaxed, this is what you get. And I've always said, the HBO and Showtime can't make fighters fight for them. You could put the best fight together on paper, and it could be a dud. But what your job is to do is to provide a firewall for your subscribers to make sure that you have the absolute best matchup. I was trying to rack my brain. When was the last time, guys, HBO allowed a guy like Orlando Lora, who came in with a six-round draw against a 7-2-2 fighter, and before that had a six-round win against an 11-27-2 fighter, and before that who had lost to Paulie Malignaggi. Certainly no real shame in losing to Paulie. He is a world-class boxer who's now a world champion. But what's even more appalling about what happened with the Keith Thurman situation is the fact that there was a license fee of between $300,000 and $400,000 attached to it. That makes the air. Meanwhile, I know people trying to make a doubleheader between Hernan Tyson Marquez and Brian Valoria, and then Roman Gonzalez against, I think, Donnie Nietes. He can't even get a call back from these networks, and I know for a fact that that doubleheader can be made for well under $1 million. So, again, I think, you know, we have to look at the networks to a large degree because they are funding these events.
I'm starting to believe that Al Heyman's a really fine chick, man, the way he's getting things done.
Al Heyman is boxing's version of Machiavelli. He gets things done, but, you know, I've said this, Dave, a lot, and I'll repeat it again. Al Heyman has a fiduciary responsibility, not to the networks or the subscribers or to the media. His job is to protect the interests of his fighters, which means minimizing the risk, maximizing the reward. By that pure definition, he's doing a great job.
Right.
But it is not the network's job to be in cahoots with them, which I feel is happening in certain stages.
That's the thing. You always have to kind of separate it, you know, especially for the slow people. We're not knocking the hustle. We're knocking the people that are allowing
right.
themselves to be hustled. It almost seems willingly with Kerry Davis kind of being the – you know, I almost would blame only Kerry. I guess for all the things that I know about him and the relationship to Heyman. But then you look at Showtime and you go, what the hell happened over there? But I guess that would be Steven Espinoza. Who's the, you know, I pointed this out when he got hired. This is what's going to happen. And, you know, a few people told me I was wrong, but look at it. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I don't, you know, I like Steven. I get along with him. And I like some of the show. I actually like some of the stuff coming up. But you're right. There seems to be this mass exodus. It's almost like Golden Boy. It kind of reminds me of that scene when the Baltimore Colts moved out in the dead of night with their U-Haul trucks and their Mayflower vans to Indianapolis. It almost seems like that with Golden Boy and his fighters, with like Richard Sherifer playing the role of Bob Irsay, you know? I think what is happening here, and this ties into a bigger story which blew up Twitter yesterday, is that
exactly,
I think that there was a movement where people were flexing their Mayweather muscles, that the carrot at the end of the stick for Showtime was, hey, you might be in the Mayweather business, so let's set up shop here. So I think that if you're Les Moonves and Matt Blank, I think it's acceptable that maybe if you end up getting all this Golden Boy stuff, that you're willing to take it as long as you get Floyd Mayweather twice a year, earning your corporation millions of dollars, because that is not unprecedented, gentlemen. That happened back in the mid-90s when Mike Tyson got out of prison. He had an exclusive Showtime date, and you saw what happened to their program. You got stuck with a lot of Frankie Lyles and Fabrice Tio's, who doubleheaders that, quite frankly, made for a lot of bad television.
Right. You got to wonder, you know, with all the shows that they've been doing, I mean, they've been adding the Showtime Extreme events, but then they're also doing, you know, quadruple headers, triple headers on Showtime. And there's a lot of Heyman fighters, and we know what that does to a budget. I've got to wonder, you know, how over budget they are at this point, you know, a little over the midway point of the year. One is Espinoza going to run into that, but to your point about, you know, bringing up 50 Cent, that's kind of what I wanted to transition into. You and I have very differing opinions on what's going down here. In my opinion, what I was told was that Heyman and or 50 Cent and Floyd are basically going to be, you know, the money team promotions. They're going to have the backing of Al Heyman, Golden Boy's out, and all the Heyman fighters are basically going to be pulled from their puppets or their promoters that think they have them or acting like they have them, and instead put under one roof that will be controlled by Heyman from afar. You have take, though.
I've been told that Heyman and both Leonard Ellerbe may not be involved, and their roles will be essentially be taken by Chris Leidy, the manager of 50, who I believe had a large part in making the vitamin water deal for him, and a gentleman by the name of Tommy Small, who's been an associate of Mayweather Promotions for years. In fact, he was instrumental in Yuri Gamboa being smuggled away from Top Rank in the lead-up to the Brandon Rios fight back in April. But I will say this, for those looking for the downfall of Al Heyman, I would never count that man out.
Right.
I've been told by people that his hold on people, his influence is very deep. And men like him do not go away easy. There's a reason why that not only they survive, but they thrive. Now, what's going to happen to 50 Cent is very interesting to me. First of all, I found it ironic that Oscar, of all people, on Twitter was lamenting how some people think it's easy to promote and they think it's so easy, almost as if saying you didn't pay your dues. When you look at the history of Golden Boy, that company was basically funded by HBO from the very beginning.
Right.
I found that to be very, very ironic. I mean,
yeah.
You're pot, meat, kettle. You're both black, okay?
Right.
And then what happened yesterday on Twitter, I just felt like I was that guy holding the camera while Rodney King was being beaten by a gaggle of LAPD officers with billy clubs. I mean, that was sad. And it was funny because 50 just flat out said, I am promoting Floyd Mayweather. I guarantee you're not. Now, I had heard this rumor last week. I think he confirmed it. And there's a theory going around right now that the reason why Golden Boy is making all these announcements from Olympians and these other fights coming up and throwing them on Showtime is almost as a measure to tell everyone, hey, we can do a lot of activity on Showtime, and to show the higher-ups that, hey, you don't need Floyd Mayweather. Look at us. We're supplying you with a lot of content. That being said, I mean, I don't know if that's the way I would do it. I think that when you go into exclusive output deals, whether they are stated or not, I think eventually your product suffers, and that even goes for venues. I mean, think about it, guys. If you're the Barclays Center, okay, on October 20th, you're opening up the building for boxing. In terms of the branding and in terms of exposure and just selling tickets, wouldn't you much rather have Klitschko against Areola than Morales Garcia? Because, guys, I was at that first fight in Houston. When I left Houston, I never said, God, I can't wait to see that fight again.
Right.
So
it makes it, well, then you also, you know, a Jose Alucin, who's kind of being forced by the WBC, I'm already kind of looking into that. I mean, this is basically a straight-up quote from Damian Ramirez, who handles him, who's also the former manager of Winky Wright, or, you know, when he was an active fighter. But he basically said that this was something he cleared me to say to the WBC, that from his point of view, Al Haymon owns yet another organization. It's called the WBC. And that all these machinations have been it's pretty inflammatory language that he used in the email that I've prepared to I'm communicating with them right now.
In other words, Hosegawa is not he's not swept under the rug. He is the rug now.
No, exactly.
At this point,
think about it, guys. Alucin to me against Danny Garcia is a live dog. But instead, he gets to face what I believe is the world's roughest, toughest, and best 40-pounder in the machine, Lucas Matisse.
It is third
Golden Boy show. Yeah.
Right.
I just think it's very interesting. And
you know,
Al Haymon.
I'm told that Al Haymon was the guy making the phone calls for Lucas Matisse's side, not Golden Boy. And he's
right.
Not even an Al Haymon fighter.
Well, as someone that has recently done a deal with Golden Boy, said to me, said, Steve, Richard Schaefer has a boss. It ain't Oscar De La Hoya.
Right.
I guess what I'm asking about critical mass, maybe we're seeing critical mass for Golden Boy, because those, like you said, setting out a press release, and you know, from my time covering the World Series of Boxing, I know people at IEBA, and I've communicated with those folks. They're looking into it already. This press release that Golden Boy puts out, they've named venue, basically, or a city, Las Vegas. They've named dates and what network they're going to be showing Olympians that haven't even fought yet.
It
seems a little strange to me.
Sign with us, and you're on TV. It's a great recruiting pitch.
Right.
It really is. I don't know if there's anything illegal about it, and we have to be very honest, guys. Going back for many years, a lot of these boxers have an agreement with people,
sure.
Whether it was Shelly Finkel and Lou Duva, or whether it was other Olympians with other managers. I was there on the scene in 2000 in Sydney, Australia, when Showtime wrote blank checks to Shelly Finkel and Gary Shaw, and HBO did one to Lou DiBella, who was just coming off his exit package for HBO. And just seeing all the dynamics of the people that were there ringside, kids were cutting deals long before their eligibility was up. They had alliances. You could sponsor these kids for years at a time. You funnel them money under the table. So I don't know if that's something new or eye-opening. To me, I call that business as usual.
Right.
And I always thought it was ironic about that 2000 Olympics. I was talking about this with people in boxing. Think about all the resources and the head start that all those kids like Jeff Lacy, Jermaine Taylor, Rocky Juarez, Juan Diaz, Bojado had with either Ludabella or with Shelly Finkel / Gary Shaw. And the one pay-per-view star from that 2000 class was with neither faction. It was Miguel Cotto with Bob Arum. So promoting and developing a fighter still matters. And I do find it interesting that Top Rank put out a release, or I think Lem Satterfield put out a story, that October 13th, Abner Morris is going to fight TBA, which in itself, fighting Tom Bob Anderson is problematic, because that means you're not going to get a great fight that night in Vegas. And I don't know how well Abner Morris, much as I like him, is going to sell in a casino, right? Then I guess on Sunday, they're going to do the Olympians. Guys, you've been to fights in Vegas on Saturday night. Maybe football season is a little bit different. I can't imagine anyone actually sticking around to see a bunch of 4- and 6-round pro debuts while football games are going on.
Right.
And by the way, those fights aren't designed to be good fights. They're designed to be showcases. I don't know what type of setting it's going to be that night. I have to be completely honest. And we're going to see where this goes. But you're right. The overall...
we're going to see more comps of family and friends at that event. Let's be honest.
And also, you know, a lot of this team is either from Ohio or they're from Los Angeles. Yeah, let's just start them off on the whole fighting in a venue that you have no business in right off the top. Let's put them in Vegas. It's just on every level, it's just poor promotional decisions. I don't understand it. From announcing fighters that you don't have and placing them in a venue that they don't belong in on a day where you're going up against football. I mean, I don't understand it. But, you know, I guess if you let somebody else come in and take over your company, you know, your business sense isn't really the best anyways.
Yeah.
To me, it just, you know, I don't want to just come off like a hater. I just, it's just the facts kind of make it hard not to be.
I want to know what you think. What's your thoughts about 50 Cent jumping this move as being a promoter? What are the pros and cons about that? And right after you say that, I think we have Nate Campbell, the Galaxy Warrior, online that wants to jump in on the conversation that we're doing. But I want to hear your take about 50 Cent.
50 Cent is very smart. Say what you want about him. He's probably a better businessman than an MC right now. He really is. And I've read some stuff on him. There was actually a Nightline feature on him that talked about his good works in Africa. He is more of a philanthropist than I think people want to give him credit for. I think we have to understand one thing. He's not necessarily getting into the boxing business. He's getting into the Mayweather business. He's going in for the very top end, and there's already a built-in audience. To me, it's like being a concert promoter and getting the Rolling Stones in 1978. You're not starting off with a garage band and trying to build a brand here. There's already a built-in audience. And I thought from the very beginning that if 50 Cent was going to do something, he's not getting in this to do Andre Durrell and Yuri Gamboa. Those guys are talented guys. But when you're dealing with the type of wealth, and I'm not just talking rich, I'm talking wealth, as Chris Rock once defined it as. He doesn't care about making $150,000 off the top on an HBO show with Durrell and Gamboa. He's not here to do a doubleheader of Boxing After Dark from the Foxwoods with those two. He's here to do the biggest events in boxing with Floyd Mayweather. And when people on Twitter are saying, well, how's he going to survive without Floyd Mayweather? Easy. He's just going to walk away, just like he did the vitamin water. It was an investment. He makes his hit, and then he cashes out. To me, he's got a built-in plan because he comes in at the top level. And if Mayweather decides to retire within 2 years, 50's in a great spot. No one says you have to keep going. You know, he's not a Don King or a Bob Arum where I think he's going to be a boxing lifer. I really don't.
Right.
Will he infuse some more interest? I think it's a story. I don't think there's any doubt. But I do think the pros for Mayweather are such that he gets to even cut out more of the middlemen, whether it's Golden Boy, whether it's Heyman. I think the association with 50 Cent to Floyd intrinsically to him is very important for whatever reason. And I think that's a plus for him. Now, the question that I have, who's going to run the daily infrastructure of the company? I mean, people say, someone asked me on Twitter today, guys, is Mayweather Promotions, has it closed its doors? And I'm thinking to myself, guys, they never opened their doors.
Right.
They never even had a license. I don't understand where that came from.
Right.
But I love when people say, oh, I think 50 is going to have problems because he's going to get blackballed because of Golden Boy. Let me tell you something, guys. You can alienate a lot of people when you have Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao. You can. That right there opens doors.
Right.
That that relationship transcends any other relationships in boxing. Having Floyd Mayweather or a Pacquiao, just by virtue of their economic clout, gives you influence. So this whole thing that somehow 50 is going to have not have his phone calls returned or knocks at the door unreturned, stop.
Right.
Trust me, when you have Mayweather, at this point, you're influential. Bottom line.
I think
and,
he's influential.
On his own, even, he's a legitimate crossover star. When 50 calls, you answer that phone. That's kind of the bottom line with him. He's kind of, in some ways, a bigger name than Oscar is. You know, maybe not. Yeah, I would even go that far. I think he could walk down the street and get mobbed. I don't think Oscar would get quite so mobbed. And I think people respect 50 a lot more than they respect Oscar. There's no pictures of him in lingerie on the internet.
That crossover helps out
a niche market. But
right.
Let me ask you this. Do you think, where does this leave Golden Boy? If they lose being able to use Broner and all those Heyman fighters, if that scenario is indeed true, do they just become just another promoter with a good relationship with Steven Espinosa?
You know, I think they stockpiled enough talent. As it relates to Broner, I was asking people, do the Al Heyman fighters have actual long-term contracts with Golden Boy? Because I know of other situations with other promoters that they don't. They're basically all one-offs. But
yeah.
Remember, Adrian Broner was originally signed with Golden Boy by Shelley Finkel. When Shelley Finkel decided to step out and do that concert thing, which went up in about 15 minutes, eventually Al Heyman took over. Broner's an important piece. I have a feeling, someone told me that's in the know, that if it was every Shelley Finkel fighter that Al Heyman took over, most likely has a long-term contract with Golden Boy. But we don't know yet. But again, I think a lot of these questions, they're going to sort itself out right around October or August 3rd when Floyd Mayweather comes out. But it's true. I think that if these Al Heyman fighters are locked in with valid contracts with Golden Boy, Golden Boy will be fine in terms of the overall depth of their stable. Now, if they're not, now Al Heyman has a decision to make. Do you go for the short term, which is Floyd? Because let's face it, Floyd's still pretty much near the end of his career, just like Manny. Or
right.
Do you stake your horse or stake your claim on the overall company of Golden Boy, which seems to have an open avenue with Showtime? See, that's going to be the question, and we're probably going to find out within the next weeks and months.
Hmm. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. You know, those really are the questions is when it comes right down to it. And I happened to wonder, you know, I'm just looking at Golden Boys in terms of their personality. They feel sometimes like the last days of Saigon. You know, Oscar kind of makes random tweets and then he deletes them. Then he tries to backpedal with 50. I think he deleted that one as well. Schaefer's comments on Ring TV, which I find ironic for a completely different reason. Here's a guy claiming that Bob Arum is manipulating the media while talking to a reporter that we all know he hired away from boxing scene and Lim Satterfield on a magazine website that he owns. Who's manipulating the media? And they have a rating system.
That was bizarre. You know, Richard, I think, is very strange. I've had a very good relationship with Richard for the most part. It's probably not that good right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that you have to separate the fact that he did a good rating. That's an empirical number. I'm not going to argue that.
Hello?
Hey, Hey, Gabriel, can you hear me? This is David Chan.
Yeah, what's up, man? What happened?
I'm not sure. David's been dropping, and I can't reach him. Yeah, it seems like David has dropped, and he hasn't come back yet. I don't know if you've heard from him.
I think his computer froze.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Well, I mean, you got to shut down every tab, basically, in order to use Skype. It just takes up all your computer's power. So he must have been getting excited and opening tabs or something. You know?
I got you. Let me check real quick to see if
we're not live right now, are we?
I'm not even sure. We might be.
Oh, good. Well, Dave, stop opening tabs.
Yeah, well, I guess he'll
get
back.
Oh, we are. Somebody just said we're you and I are live right now. So it's
okay,
a little
good.
Peek behind the curtain on Leave It in the Ring.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we could keep going. I mean, we could call Steve back and just start talking. That's hilarious. People are saying, yes, we are indeed live. Yes, thank you for letting me know. Well, I'm going to call Steve back in. How I do that, I have no idea. See, Dave is the command control of this whole deal. So I'm just sitting here in my office here in Los Angeles. Dave calls in the guests, and I just kind of sit here and answer questions and do what I do. Mr. Chen, I'm going to pass over the number of Steve Kim, and you can call him in if you could. And Steve is letting me know that he can go till about 6:30 if we need him back. Just give me 1 second. Dave, seriously, you need to come back because I'm floundering here all by myself. Yes, I know Dave's not on Facebook. Thank you for telling me. People, I'm just trying to roll with this right now. So where were we? We were talking about Golden Boy and the problems that they're potentially in down the line. However, this could all be, you know, one giant conglomeration. It could be TMT Promotions mixed with Golden Boy and Al Heyman to kind of form what they were talking about. I think it was interviews last year on Ring TV where they discussed the idea of basically UFCing boxing, signing all the talent or as much talent as they possibly could. And we've seen Al making, you know, a lot of signings this year. Arislandi Lara, Josecito Lopez. He's kind of doing what Bob Arum does. He's picking A-sides. He's picking up B-sides. He's got Keith Thurman. Gary Russell Jr. is also another important puzzle piece there. Where does he go? He's a guy that we want to all see. All of us want to see him accelerate to the next level and start taking on serious opposition. But instead, you know, he's kind of driving in that Heyman lane where he's fighting handpicked guys and kind of taking them out in exciting fashion. But, you know, we want to see more. I think Gary wants to show us more as he talked to us, you know, a couple weeks ago on the show. You know what's really hard is handing over numbers while you are talking. That is not easy. Dave has not actually come back. I'm passing over the numbers for Steve Kim, who's sitting in his office chilling, and hopefully we'll get him back for at least another 15 minutes, and then he'll leave me alone, and hopefully Dave will come back, and I won't be alone. I'll have somebody to talk to about boxing. We could also take callers, David Chen, if we can't get a hold of Steve. And then Nate Campbell was also on the line wanting to talk to us, and I would certainly like to hear anything that Nate Campbell has to say, just so that I don't have to keep talking to fill the dead air. I don't know if anybody actually caught Nate Campbell's last fight, but talk about a fight that kind of made prognostication is one of those things. You know, readers, I don't like to call them fans because that's just kind of egotistical, but like readers and fans of the sport of boxing that like to communicate with me. A lot of times they make a big deal. You make a prediction about a fight and they go, you know, for the next 10 years or next, you know, every time you make another one, they'll bring up that one that you were wrong on. Well, you picked so-and-so to beat so-and-so. Nate Campbell, you know, I just think, you know, that's not really my job. I'm trying to just be a writer, look at the news, try to give it to you through a truthful lens, or certainly the most truthful lens I can. And every once in a while, I got to make fight predictions. But this Nate Campbell one, against Zot here back June 30th in Atlas Arena in Poland. I thought Campbell was done. I didn't expect him to do much of anything in this fight. He had semi-retired, from what I understood, and yet here he was, coming back this year, takes out Victor Kao in March, and then pulls off this unanimous decision of Zot over Zot. That's the kind of performance. It shows like skills age very well, like the defensive skills, craftiness that Nate Campbell brought to the ring both those nights. But that, all of us ultimately really don't know what we're talking about. We can discuss it till the nth degree. We can make predictions. We can look at past fights and compare styles and similar opposition or whatever. But when the bell rings, ultimately, it's two men fighting. And the guy with the better skills, the guy that's just feeling the mojo that night or has a better game plan or all of the above is going to come out the victor. And really, the only true experts are really the fighters themselves and maybe fate. What's that, David?
I said, we can try to get back on. I'm having a real tough time to get back on Blog Talk. I don't know why. It just it crashed on me, and it's not letting me through. It's not even letting me use my Skype right now. So we apologize for whatever happened. I don't know. The guy from the Boxing Fix had this problem, I believe, last week. And I think even Ocho Book Sales had the same problem.
Blog Talk thing.
Yeah. I'm on Facebook now and back on Twitter, but for some reason it won't let me back into the studio. So sorry about that, everybody.
Too many late night parties. So like, look, man, you keep trashing this place. We're gonna have to keep you out tonight. Well, why don't we call up? Can you get Dave Chen? Can you get Steve back for another 15 minutes? And maybe we can bring in Nate Campbell and kind of continue the conversation from there.
Dave, are you there? Or did you fall out too? Dave, won't you let us know who's online on hold and or text me, whatever you want to do. I'm still trying to get onto the switchboard. Blog Talk has crashed, so I can't physically get on for some reason. There's something up.
Well, I can't wait to go back and listen to that long-ass rambling monologue that I just went through while I was all alone on the air. Don't do that to me. You know how I hate to be left alone, especially suddenly.
I'm still trying to get on, I don't know why it's not letting me through for some reason.
I think you should just let it go and just start talking to me, I think this is it. It's kind of funny, the night that I get on Skype and, like, my stuff's all working, like, yours crashes, and now our roles are reversed.
I know.
And I have no idea how to call in people on Skype. I don't really even understand the technology. I've got the headphones, but I don't have the knowledge, so... If we're going to call Steve in, somebody else is going to have to do it.
Yeah, exactly. I want to talk about Garcia. I mean, a lot of people had some mixed emotions about that fight, calling it a lucky punch. When I was watching it, I really saw – I mean, the thing was is that he was squared up and he was throwing some looping punches in that fight, okay? And even though you normally don't want to square up and you don't want to throw these wide shots, they were actually working for him. And the one thing that I saw him too that he was trying to do with Amir Khan was time him. And the thing with Amir Khan, and this is the thing too that I wanted to bring up, to light, was that a lot of people were surprised. I did say on the show before that Garcia was really going to have to, come of age for this fight. He was going to have to come out and be aggressive and be on top of him. And he pretty much kind of showed that. And those body shots that HBO did not even credit him for throughout those rounds did a lot for him against Amir Khan. Those body shots, to me, is what slowed him down and made Amir that jab that was, was lightning speed in those first two rounds and even in the third round. You saw in that mid-third round, he started to slow down. And that timing that Garcia was trying to do, Danny Garcia was trying to do, it started to work. And I like, I've never really been truly impressed by Garcia, but I got to tell you, Gabriel, I was a I was really impressed that he was able to adjust. Now, was it an adjustment that had flaws to it? It definitely was. But to me, the kid threw out the boxing skills. To me, the kid figured, I'm not going to outbox Amir Khan. I'm just going to have to brawl with him, and I'm going to have to try to land some heavy shots. You know, Amir Khan's jaw has always been fun to watch because you never know when the guy's going to be dropped and hurt. And the thing, though, that what Danny Garcia did was that he saw that it hurt him. He saw that it landed. And he did exactly what everybody else failed to do, which was keep going at him, keep the pressure, and keep coming forward.
Yeah, you know, what was interesting to me with Garcia, I'm still just kind of fixing all the fallout from your disappearance, texting Steve. Remember, we talked about it coming into the fight. You know, Garcia,
right.
What I wanted to see was, would he make that choice that Lamont Peterson made? And no, I don't mean going to a testosterone clinic, but would he make the choice of, okay, plan A, boxing with him isn't going to work. Let's go to plan B. Let's go all in and get physical. Let's get to the body. He made that decision, but there was also a plan to go along with it. You saw it really that he started to throw combinations with Khan. You know, with the speed guy, it goes back to, you know, Antonio Tarver 1 or 2 against Roy Jones. What they realized was that if you wait on a speed guy, you're going to just end up looking at him a lot of the time or chasing after him and he's already gone. Instead, the minute he begins to throw, even if he's getting off a couple punches and you're beginning, you throw with him so that your third and fourth punch, one of those is going to land. And it kind of negates the speed. Yeah, you're putting yourself at risk, but if you do it right, tuck your chin in and really let loose and kind of keep your head out of danger like he did when he landed that left hook on Amir Khan, landing on the back jaw and neck of Khan and kind of by
right.
the ear. It was exactly that kind of punch. He was throwing with him. And you saw it early on in the round. They did a combination, and he finished with that hook, and you could hear the loud smack. And then later on, boom, it happened. It was just bound to happen. Excellent game plan by Danny Garcia, and he just did more than I expected him to. And I think we also underestimated it in a sense. It's kind of not fair because the punch was so damn good, that left hook. There's not a lot of people that would take that punch and survive. But there is a kind of a fragility to Amir Khan that we didn't take into account. Yeah, he can take a beating, get pounded on, but he gets rattled. It's not like in the midst of it. It's not like Castillo Corrales where, yeah, he takes a lot of punches and gets hurt. He kind of shells up and shuts down when he's getting his ass kicked. That's kind of his problem. And then when he isn't completely clear, he'll stand and kind of start to trade when he shouldn't. He doesn't clinch. He loses kind of all sense in the middle of fire and kind of does everything wrong. And I didn't really account for that.
Let's be fair. He loses all sense because his brain is just being, you know, scattered all over the place.
Yeah, but like a Gotti could get scattered all over the place and still kind of know what to do, you know.
Right.
Castillo, Corrales knew exactly what to do. He still had his wits about him. I mean, he got dropped 5 times by Mayweather. And was like clear as a bell. Khan, you get the sense that somewhere inside of him there's like a, you know, there's like a red light and like a, you know, sounding, you know, and like somebody going system overload. You know, and he's just flipping out and like flailing. And I don't mean to make fun of the guy, but he just doesn't handle that situation very well. And he's like a, you know, they talk about like 5-tool players. He's kind of like a 4-tool player. He's kind of got everything, maybe 3-tool because he doesn't have a lot of power either. He's got straight punches, gives good interviews. He moves around really well. He's kind of almost there, but he doesn't really recover well when he's hurt, and he doesn't have one-punch knockout power. You know, he fights like he does, but he doesn't. Those things, I mean, when he goes to welterweight, those things aren't going to change. They're only going to be magnified. I'm not really sure where he goes. And he made $950,000 so that they could give away more tickets than they sold.
Yeah, exactly.
Yikes.
And I'm back on Skype. I was able to get back on Block Talk here. I don't know what's going on. I had to switch over, go on my laptop rather than my desktop. But, you know, I wanted to, though, give credit to his dad. I mean, because a lot of people were really focused on his father, Angel Garcia. I mean,
should not be.
I know. You know, the thing too is that he did one of the oldest tricks in the book, which was get in the fighter's head. And And let's be honest, Freddie Roach has been he's been very successful in playing that role when it comes for his fighters. He kind of stayed out of that role with Danny Garcia's father and allowed Danny Garcia's dad kind of take over and be the showcase. And to me, it made Amir Khan come out a little more faster, a little more intense, and it allowed him to gas out and be there for those body shots. You know, he didn't do a whole lot of running around and circling the way he did in the past with Lamont Peterson. He was, like, right there to be hit. He was right there to be damaged. So I say kudos to Angel Garcia. Now, where does Amir go from here? I mean, they're already announced he's going to be back into the ring. Hey, I applaud you because from a knockout, from a nasty knockout like that and being hurt the way he was, and how many fans jumped off that wagon and jumped onto the Danny Garcia. And let's be honest here, you know, even his people, the Puerto Ricans, they weren't even behind this poor kid. But as soon as he knocked out Amir Khan, I saw on Twitter how many of them embraced him as being a Puerto Rican. I thought it was kind of funny at the same time, kind of sad that it took this kid to show out like this for you to recognize him as being a really qualified and good fighter.
Yeah. Danny, it was one of my favorite things in boxing is like when a guy does what Danny Garcia's dad did, just being crazy, you know, just acting the fool like before the fight. And then like after, like when it all works and his fighter won, it's like the mask of sanity. Like he goes back to normal. Like, oh, you know, it was all just part of the plan. And everybody kind of forgives it. Beforehand, everybody was like flipping out, like flying carpets. Like, you racist bastard. You know, everybody was just completely up in arms. Now he looks like a complete genius. And, you know, his plan did work. It did rile Khan up. You saw the pictures in the final press conference. I was at the first press conference, and Khan handled it well. Like, just kind of like, you know, I'm not gonna get into the trash talking. You know, the dad was, like, interrupting him and, like, goading him, and he still handled it with class. But a photo really stuck out to me, like, afterwards, seeing it at the press conference, and Khan is at the podium, and he's, like, pointing, and he's looking at the father, something really mad at the son. And, yeah, right there, you kind of look back. I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but you go, he's got him. And it worked. You look at the way he fought. I thought even that, as many fights as Khan has had, he is only 25, and he still fights at an amateur pace. It's real hot, and it's almost like there's only four rounds. He doesn't meet out his energy. He could have cut his activity in half in the first couple rounds and still won those rounds very clearly. It wouldn't have been that exciting, but there was no need to stand in front of Danny Garcia and not turn him all night, you know? But maybe he saw a little bit of the blood, and Danny was kind of swelling. He's thinking, man, this is a six-round knockout waiting to happen. And who's to say that Danny doesn't walk into some sort of bizarre left hook, you know, off of good footwork from Khan, which is, it's good until he starts getting hit and hurt. And then it's just like one guy's Sweet Science 559 on Twitter just said, Khan is a complete mess when he's in trouble. And yeah, he is, you know, he just falls all apart. So I think it's going to be interesting. Garcia's a Heyman guy also, where they go next. I mean, they're going with Morales too, but you know, and I brought up a Jose Illusigan, and I've had people say, well, he's fighting Matisse. It's like, yeah, but he's not excited about that fight. And it was a purse bid. It's being kind of forced on him. And yeah, you do say, like, fight, but I mean, he's the number one contender. He should be fighting Garcia. He should have fought for that title when Garcia didn't even have that belt. He should have fought for that title before Eric Morales did. So, again, you know, is this about the fighters? I mean, is Golden Boy for the fighters? Do they care about the fighters? Are they cleaning up the sport? Are the WBC, what is their purpose here? These are important questions. Illusigan, yeah, we don't know who he is, and we shouldn't, you know, he couldn't fill up an empty ballroom. But still, what's right is right. The guy's earned his shot. He's paid his money. He's been promised even before a board of, you know, the ratings panel or whatever you call them, the WBC board of directors. They promised him a title shot back when Garcia was fighting Morales. Like, the next fight would be you, and now they're doing a rematch after he's fought somebody else. Same stuff, different day. I get the feeling that I'm all alone again. I don't hear Dave. There's kind of this silence.
David, yeah, I think you're by yourself again, Dave.
Well,
yeah,
let's take a caller. All right, how about we take a caller? I can't.
He's the one who's doing the conversation on. Hello, can you hear me?
Who do we have on the line?
We've got CT on the line still, and he would like to talk about Khan and Garcia. Why don't we get him back on? CT, are you there?
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing good. If we have Nate Campbell out there, I wouldn't mind talking to Nate. He was listening earlier. He might have just wanted to talk to Steve Kim. I'm not sure. Maybe that's why Steve's not answering his phone. It's him and Nate Campbell are talking. CT, did you have another question?
Yeah, I was going to just talk about the Conor Garcia fight. I think the week before that, I was actually saying the same thing you were saying as far as, like, Garcia making it a dog fight, and I didn't think he could do that. And I really didn't think he could time Khan's punches because of, you know, his hand speed. But when I look at Khan's fight, I see his punch selection, you know what I mean? The way he throws the same type of combinations, it's almost like a 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. He doesn't really mix – I mean, he mixes, you know, at sometimes like uppercuts and sometimes hooks, but for the most part, it's the same pattern. You know, he.
Yeah.
You know,
the uppercuts from way too out too. I don't like the way he throws that uppercut. It's uppercut's a hard punch. You know, it really should be an inside punch. It's the rare man like a Marquez that can throw a jab and then come the second punch is going to be like a rear uppercut. It's very rare. I mean, it's kind of a signature punch of Beristain. I love the way his fighters throw the uppercut because they throw it correctly. You know, they're leaning on their front foot and their hand, their guard is always, you know, it's kind of a high front hand. And so it doesn't have a long way to travel when they dip their knee, kind of twist their hip a little bit backwards to cock it. And then you shift all your weight, you know, to the back foot and release that fist right from where it is. You know, it should be all one motion. Zab Judah kind of used to throw it, at least early in his career, middle of his career, incorrectly, in my opinion, where he would take the glove off of his chin and then begin the uppercut moving up. You're kind of actually fighting against your body. The way Beristain's guys do it, it's locked to your face, and then it comes right off the body, very explosive. Khan kind of has Zab Judah's problem. It's not attached to anything. The fist is kind of out in space, and then he dips his whole hand and brings it up, as opposed to bringing your whole body and making it all one weapon. And that's pretty much, I think, what got him knocked out or knocked down that first time against Danny Garcia. It's a sloppy uppercut. It's a dangerous punch because if you miss the upper, you know, there's the hook is just going to take your head off because you're just completely exposed on that side. You know, that's why in my opinion, safer to throw the rear uppercut because you've already blinded him with the jab and you're coming with something underneath. They're usually expecting a 1-2, and instead you're coming underneath the guard and snapping the head back and then setting up a hook, you know?
Yeah.
But
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I heard a lot of, you know, a lot of people, especially when I was watching the fight with other people, you know, everything, you know, Khan was doing everything right, and that, you know, everybody wasn't giving Danny Garcia credit, but I give all the credit to Danny Garcia. You know, I saw it coming in like maybe a little bit past the second round, like mid to the second round. He was starting to time Khan a little bit better, like towards the end. Mm-hmm. And then the third round, you know, he caught him with the same exact shot he hit Morales with. It was almost a duplicate of the same punch. And, you know, hit him with that left hook. It's kind of like his head is kind of turned, but he, you know, he lines it up pretty well before he throws it. It's not like he's just winging his arm out there.
There's a good picture of him actually kind of still looking at him at the corner of his eye as it's landing. He knew where that punch was going to land, you know. That was it looked like a planned arsenal, you know. It is the same punch that got Morales, too, you know. He also made a concerted effort to start going to that body. Even what I liked about it was even when he was getting warned for low blows, and they were more like hip shots, he still stayed with it, you know. It was like, you know, I'm still going to commit to the body. And that's a sign of a guy that's just strong will and a good game plan. Like, no, you know, I'm not going to.
I like
I'm probably not going to get the points taken away, you know,
yeah.
until this is not going to go the distance, so screw it. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, you know.
I like the way he throws hooks, though. He kind of turns his hip into the whole hook, almost like a Turo Gotti type hook. I think he turns his body very well into his hook. So I know a lot of his punches have a lot of, you know, body into it. So those punches were definitely affecting Khan. And I think Khan's always going to have that type of problem, you know, with his punch selection. You know, maybe if he if he changes, if he decides to change trainers, maybe they can teach him a little bit more, even though I know it's not going to change too much because that's just who he is. He's a very energetic fighter who's always going to have that type of style maybe. He's probably always like hyperactive or hyperventilating when he's fighting, but he's probably always going to have that problem. As far as his chin goes, I don't know. I want to say, you know, from his reaction, the way he takes a punch, I want to say he's very chinny. You know, he doesn't react well to punches, like you were saying about Gotti and, you know, Corrales. He's more of a panic mode when he gets hit instead of just...
Yeah, I think there's degrees of chinny, too. You know, like somebody was arguing with me yesterday or a couple days ago that Lennox Lewis wasn't chinny. They were saying, you know, well, I'm like, yeah, but he got knocked out twice. No, no, but still, he what's up, man? He still got knocked. They were saying, well, you know, but what about the Ray Mercer fight? Even the fights with Holyfield, he was able to kind of stand in there. There's different types of chinny, I guess. He also got hit by like very large men, and in the heavyweight division, one punch, everybody's kind of chinny, you know. But with Khan, it's like Tito Trinidad had a weird chin in that you could hit him early and drop him, but he would pop right back up and he would be not even hurt or wobbly, and he would just come right back after you. And you generally, the round, either he knocked you out in that round or he knocked you out in the fight, and certainly would be winning the round by the end of it if he got dropped early. Like Yoribu Campos is a good example, but there's a lot of them, Obakar as well. One type of chin. But then, you know, with Khan, yeah, it's like Steve hit it really well. He has bad punch resistance. It's like he could take like a certain amount, but then you hit him right on the button, and once he's hurt, like he's done. That's it. There's really no recovering. And Garcia was smart in his follow-up. He didn't go crazy, and he kept landing like hard, solid shots to keep him there, to keep him hurt until he could finish him off. It's a very intelligent performance, and it's not what I expected from him. You know?
Right.
I mean, I expect him to be kind of – I always thought of him as kind of average, just kind of good at a lot of things but not great at any one thing. And I guess the sum of those parts is almost like Hopkins-esque in that Hopkins, I always looked at it the same way. He's just a hard-nosed Philly fighter. And you know, the sum of his parts is greater than most guys, just one good attribute. I'm excited to see him, and he's like a real guy.
I'm actually looking forward to that. Lucas Matisse versus, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he was the number one. I actually seen him fight on YouTube. That's going to be an exciting fight. I think both fighters come forward. I'm interested to see who wins. I think Matisse has got too much power for him, though, but, you know, it's going to be exciting.
He's a physical mismatch for a lot of people.
Right.
Josie Aluzigan is his name. Yeah, Dave, are you still with us? Are you here? I heard Dave for a second. Yeah, Josie Aluzigan he's not an easy matchup. I just think Matisse is the class of the division right now. To me, although at the same time, he's getting a lot of run off of stopping Soto, which I thought was impressive, but I didn't even think Humberto Soto was a 135-pounder. And he hadn't proven anything to me at 140. So before I kind of, you know, throw a parade for Lucas Matisse, who I've liked for a long time, I think he's, in my opinion, he's undefeated. The Zab Judah fight was pretty close. I don't consider it an outright robbery. It's just it went the home guy's way. But certainly the Devin Alexander fight, I didn't think that Alexander could make a case for winning that fight. You know, but Matisse to me is certainly the class. He kind of reminds me of like Gennady Golovkin a little bit. He's probably the most potential to kind of box the punch your ears off in the division out of anybody. I think he would knock out Marcos Maidana. I think he could handle his power, and I think he'd be able to box enough to set up his power. I think he would get him out of there in like 8-9 rounds, to be perfectly honest. I think he would wreck Amir Khan. He'd be able to handle that speed. I'd like to see him and Danny Garcia. That fight's probably never going to happen, though. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I think the guy that he's fighting that night, I'm sorry, could you help me out with his name?
Josie. It took me a long time. Don't worry about it.
he's very awkward. It's, you know, the way he swings, but he's very strong. Now, I think that's going to be the strongest guy, I think, Matisse has fought.
He's been off so long that I wonder about, you know, Josie, like, he's a big guy, as I recall. He's a tall man.
Yeah.
And he's going to have to make that weight. And you know, when you're not active, your body changes over that period of time. And is his metabolism going to slow down? what kind of training has he been doing? He's 32 years old. He's 5'9", and he's a southpaw on top of it. So he's going to have those kind of advantages, but I wonder, you know, what is making 140 do for him, do to him? And he hasn't fought since September of last year. That's a problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, it'll be a full year. I wonder if it's going to be one of those kind of lethargic performances. That's why I kind of thought, I understood why his management was like protecting his ranking, his number one spot, by not fighting and not risking it. But at the same time, like, you're not moving out of the position that you're in. You're not raising awareness of your fighter by fighting. You're not keeping your fighter sharp and ready for that title shot when he gets it. Keeping him hungry by having him beat up on lesser guys and reminding him he should be fighting a champion. Instead, he's just sat in mothballs, and you better be able to pull out the performance of a lifetime in order to maintain your spot now, because they're forcing you to fight Lucas Matisse.
Yeah.
It was a dangerous gamble that they've done, and we'll see how it goes. It's a very intriguing matchup. I'm wondering if the fight even happens, even though it's gone to purse bid. We'll see.
Yeah.
I'm hearing that she's not happy with the fight. I mean, they may have to take it, though.
Yeah, I remember you guys brought that up to his promoter that time when he was on the air. You know, if he's going to fight other people, why, you know, he's waiting for the shot against Morales, why he was fighting Garcia at the time. You guys brought that up to them. They didn't have an answer for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of tough, though. You know, I'm in continual contact with that group, and it's a tough situation because you got a guy that he's earned his title shot. Maybe earned is the wrong word, but he's done all the things that boxing has required of him from a business standpoint to have that number one spot. You know, he may not have beaten anybody that we've ever heard of, but, you know, that Ali, it was the Ali Chiba fight, might have been yet another eliminator, might have been the second eliminator, but he earned it with that fight. And since that time, he has not had his title shot. And that's why, you know, people bring up, like, ratings, like they bring up the ring ratings to me or other ratings, you know, the WBC, and, like, you know, Dan Raphael goes through his soft shoe act of, you know, hashtag WBC is disgusting. And, yeah, they are disgusting and evil and corrupt, in my opinion. But the ratings, I mean, they don't work the way they even propose to. I mean, you know, like, they don't work that way at all. So I don't really even pay attention to them, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I guess it's a good way of tracking corruption if you want to watch how the ratings, you know, work on a month-to-month or, you know, six-month basis. You see how they shift and then kind of follow the money or, you know, follow the companies that back these guys. I guess that's one way, you know, that the ratings would be worthwhile. For anything other than that, they're not at all. And the ring ratings, I mean, yeah, there is a ratings panel, and some of those writers I actually do read and respect. But, I mean, come on. They're owned by Golden Boy. I can't really care too much about what they have to say, you know. I don't see them as bastions of purity just because the simple fact that they're owned by Oscar De La Hoya and Richard Schaefer is somebody that probably has the ability to call shots over there, and I don't consider him to be an honest man. So why would I trust anything that they have to say? you know, that's just me.
Yeah. Have you heard anything about Juwan Guzman lately? Because, you know, I haven't heard too much about him.
No, I haven't. As far as what his next move might be, I'm not sure. You know, that'd be an interesting fight. You know, at 140, I wouldn't mind seeing him fight Adrian Broner. I've heard, you know, checking around the message boards, people are definitely talking about that as an interesting matchup. And I don't think he has the power to hurt Broner. I think he has probably the strength to compete with him. And certainly defensively, I think he's superior to Broner in many respects. In terms of footwork, and the way he uses his hands and moves his upper body, I think it would be an interesting matchup. It would also be somebody that would be not mentally intimidated by Adrian Broner and the whole act. For one, he wouldn't know what he's saying. I don't know how good his English is, but he's primarily a Spanish-speaking man. But also, he's just, you know, he probably has the arrogance of an elite athlete, which is what he is. I don't know how you'd feel about that fight. What do you think?
I would like that fight because I like Juwan Guzman as a fighter. I watched him coming up. You know, I like that fight he had with sorry, I forgot his name.
Back on.
Oh, hi.
Man, you know, I don't know. I don't. Would I get in trouble if I show up at Block Talk's office and strangle one of these guys over there?
Yeah, seriously.
This is killing it for me, man. I mean, we were on the road. We were having a good time. And, you know, where's the 12-pack when you need one right now? That's what I want to know, you know. Hey, Gabe.
How you doing, man?
I'm good. I don't even know what to talk about right now because I keep getting dropped. Every time I feel like I'm going to start a conversation.
About, Joanne Guzman versus Adrian Bronner.
Possibility.
And Mark on Mark Leek. I'm not sure how you pronounce your last name. I'm not sure if I should say your last name, but he reminded me that, you know, Joanne Guzman won last week, and we were talking about his future, but he won last week at a first round knockout. We were talking about Guzman as a potential opponent for Adrian Bronner. What do you think, Dave?
I think
I kinda like the fight.
I actually do like the fight because Broner's going to get a taste of his own medicine with a guy coming in overweight.
I didn't even think about that. So they could have an eating contest and then fight.
And we like to see Broner cry about, hey, oh, I'm not going to come out because this guy came in as a heavyweight, you know, not a lightweight. So I think, you know, we want to talk about paybacks. Why not? Give him a shot. Let's see what happens. Let's see who can out-eat each other. That's what I want to find out. See?
Yeah, Dave. Then that was it. Dave's like a ghost tonight. He's just kind of like we're in a seance, and he kind of occasionally we tune in to his channel, and then he disappears.
Yeah.
Mid-word. I don't know what's – there must be some sort of like government testing going on near his home because he's just in some sort of communication blackout. I like the fight. I think the eating contest is a good idea. I think you could sell it. At the first, you know, press conference, they could do like a hot dog eating contest or something. Or fried Twinkie, which is what Broner apparently enjoys. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's weird because Joanne Guzman's been on a little bit of a run. You know, he fought in March, the Jesus Baban fight, and he had a pretty spectacular finish to that. And he's made weight in that division, 140, three times in a row now. So, I mean, going back to last year, he hasn't really fought. I mean, Pabon was a decent opponent. I mean, he had a winning record. And this last guy, not really. But there's consistency, at least, that he's working, you know, that he's fighting often. He's staying consistent in his weights. A lot of it, you know, he had blamed it on, like, you know, death of his mother, not making weight, not mentally being right. And so maybe this trend here is the guy's right and he's making one last run. If he can make weight and stay consistent, Guzman could be, you know, he could see himself cashing out to a good fight like that, to a Broner, and maybe not even turning into a cash out, but actually like a legitimate win that propels him to other things. He's got the skills. We all thought he was going to be a pound for pound fighter and a solid guy taking on anybody in any division, you know, within three weight classes. And instead, his career kind of was a wash. I'd like to see him do more with what the promise that he showed.
Yeah, I remember when he fought Soto. He made Soto look almost like a C level fighter that night. he dominated Soto. I just want to see, you know. Especially who Broner's going to fight next. I know he's named all those fighters after he fought Escobedo, but realistically, I want to see who he's going to fight. And I definitely want to see him tested because I don't think he's fought top opposition at all. You know what I mean? He's being so arrogant with who he fought. I mean, I'm not going to say these guys are nobodies, but they're definitely not on the top-notch level. I know it wasn't his fault he couldn't make the fight with the Scottish fighter. Barnes, I think his name was. Last name.
Yeah. Yeah, that wasn't his fault. But, I mean, you know, I was still kind of wondering how – was that actually going to, you know, take place? Were they talking about it? Was it just preliminary? And then when the guy couldn't do it, you know. I don't know. There's a lot of things. I mean, people talk about top rank. There he is. Top rank Golden Boy Cold War. But a lot of times, you know, these British fights don't – those guys make plenty of money and they sell plenty of seats. They have no reason to come over here. There's kind of almost a whole league that's going on over there that never really mingles or rarely does. You know, usually one of their superstars comes over and then does the Vegas cash out at the end of the career. I'd like to see more. You know, a guy calls themselves world champions, but they don't really fight everybody all over the world unless it's like some obscure like African guy that they bring over. You know,
right? That nobody knows about. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or a faded European guy. That was like the trend last year, you know. Let's bring over a European white guy and beat him up at the end of his career. And other than that, we don't really get, to me, you know, true like international competition on a regular basis. That's something I'd like to see more of.
Absolutely.
So I look at, you know, where we're at as a sport. Like I brought up with Steve, just the idea that we're hitting like a critical mass. And what I mean by that is, like, I mean, you look at all the things. I mean, drug testing has really come to the fore this year. Guys have you know, that issue speaks for itself. It just kind of continues. But then you look at how, like, this weird shift with Showtime and the Heyman and Golden Boy, that alliance is going on. But then Golden Boy just, this, like, blatantly, to me, this Olympic story is kind of a big deal. I know I'm sounding like a Golden Boy hater because they've banned me and now I'm just, everything they do is evil. That's not true. I just look at the things that happen, and that's a very strange thing to me, to announce we're going to be putting on U.S. Olympians. I mean, if this was the NCAA, like, you wouldn't see that. You know, they're not allowed to talk to those guys until a certain period of time.
But
the NFL couldn't talk to...
Let me put this one out, though. But HBO did in the past, and then I'm talking about in the past where they did put... Not, they weren't even Olympians yet. They were, you know, they made it to go to the Olympics. They did put fighters that were going to head out to the Olympics on their... on HBO network. So, you know, I mean, what Golden Boy is trying to do with Showtime, to me, it's nothing really majorly new. It just hasn't been done in such a long time, because Oscar De La Hoya was on HBO before he won the gold.
Well, this is the thing, is I don't really, I understand that. And I think it's, I'm not saying it's a bad thing to be, to advertise these guys, but also, like I was pointing out, you're putting a bunch of guys not in their region. You're basically saying we're going to give you HBO. The thought of it is not like, you know, building Oscar. You know, Oscar's early fights were in Los Angeles. They were regional specific. They're basically kind of dangling a carrot in front of these kids and saying, if you sign with us, you get to be on CBS in Vegas for a big fight card to debut. And
well, it's no different than
it's just a habit. But the overall point is this: is that look at all these things separately. Look at how fighters, like, there's the AB, you know, 2100. There's it's a fighter bill in California that's kind of limiting certain promotional deals. Where, like, you know, pretty good for MMA fighters, where you have to, like, sign away your promotional rights for the rest of your life. Like, you can't do things like that. Like, a promoter can't force you to do things like that. You can't sign some sort of merchandising deal that extends past, like, your promotional deal. It doesn't make any sense. And what I've been told is that Golden Boy is one of the people kind of opposing that. So is Dana White, is opposing that bill. And the people are putting a pretty heavy lobby behind it. When I look at all these things,
right,
what I mean is, like, kind of like an end time, but we're at a point where it's like, we need to, is it a national commission? Is it international? We need some sort of universal regulation. These things are just running so rampant that guys can put a press release out for fighters they haven't even signed to be on TV at a specific date, because there's just no regulation in our sport. I guess that's my overall point. Are we reaching a
right
point of critical mass? We just really need help. We need to do something to rein this in. Or is it just business as usual and we'll always be like this?
I would have to say it's business like usual until – I mean, let's put it this way. I mean, if media can't get along and get their things straightened out, how do we expect a healthy boxing spectacle for the fans? I find that really hard, you know. A prime example, we were talking about something that I think media overall needs to do is stop allowing promoters to be bullies. And some media people took it the wrong way. They took it to the left field, you know. And really quick, I'm going to apologize to Blog Talk, because it wasn't you guys. It was actually my computer keep crashing. And good thing that we didn't line up guests on the show except for Steve, because, wow, that would have been really terrible. And I know that our PR team right now are probably going, pulling their hairs out of their head, because we are having a live show in Oxnard, California, with Leaving the Ring. It'll be our very first live broadcast. Hopefully there's not going to be any technical problems, man. You know, and
we're not bringing your computer on the road with us. That's
we're not yet.
Out.
We're leaving that yeah. over here. But you know, I don't even think it was my computer. To tell you the truth, it keeps saying that the internet, and my youngest came in here and was complaining about his too falling out on his computer. So I think there's something. They've been doing a lot of construction here in my neighborhood. So I might be one of those things. So we'll find out here or there. Fight fans, you want to call in here on Leaving the Ring, speak to myself, Dave Duenas. I mean, catch me if you can, because I don't fall off and crash. You can definitely speak to my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, who's been holding up the bar over here. You know, in the past, Gabriel would get really silent, and it was almost like witnessing a small child trying to find his way out of the dark. But this time, this guy brought a flashlight with batteries. They're going to last and stuff. So 347-215-7598. Come on in and talk to us here. 3 hours of boxing talk. We're not controversial. We're just honest. And we try to be as honest as we can here on Leaving the Ring. Appreciate all the emails that we get. Make sure you pick up your Undisputed. Let's patch in some fight fans. Let's get Alex, who wants to talk Robert the Ghost Guerrero in San Jose. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, how's it going? You guys have a great show, and I appreciate you guys putting it on.
Hey, thanks.
Thank you, man.
You know, today was kind of weary and kind of crazy here on Leaving the Ring. What want to talk about?
You know, I wanted to talk about, because I've been hearing the press, you know, that I'm really looking forward to the Guerrero fight this weekend, and, you
right.
know, I think it's going to be a really good fight. I don't want it to get overlooked by the, you know, by you guys. And also, I've been hearing that, you know, if he wins that fight, a lot of people are saying that he doesn't deserve the shot at Mayweather. And you know, and I find that really surprising, because the guy's been through a whole lot with his family. I mean, he's fought for titles while his wife was battling cancer, and he's fought through 6 weight divisions. And, you know, I just wanted to get your guys' thought on that.
Well, this is my thing. Let's take out that whole equation there about his wife, because you know, that part of his life is not going in the ring. I mean, a lot of fighters have great stories. They come into the sport with hardship already, you know, so let's not alienate all the other fighters. Now, does he deserve a shot at Floyd Mayweather? I think he gets closer by beating Adrian, and I said it too. I think this is a great fight. This is a real fight, and this is a real major test for Robert the Ghost Guerrero. I've known the Guerreros for quite some time. I've known his publicists for a very long time. We went to, we grew up in the same neighborhood. We finally get to see whether he puts up or he shuts up at this weight division, you know, because Robert has been saying, I can make it. I'm actually, you know, starving myself. I'm actually a bigger guy. I'm actually a 147 guy going all the way down to 126 to 130, 135. So this is just a way of us finding out, does he belong in this weight, and can he hang with the fighters in this weight division? So I wouldn't jump so far. I wouldn't, hop over the fence right away screaming Floyd Mayweather. I like to see what Robert does with another 147. I don't like to see guys get rushed. I like to see guys get built. And even with the layoff, I think Robert deserves a little bit more brushing in that division before trying to paint on the canvas.
I hear where you're coming from, but me, like, as a fan, you know, What gets me mad and what pisses me off is when you start to read stories, like before the Garcia Khan fight, Richard
right.
Schaefer will come out and start saying things like, oh, Khan is the most deserving fighter in the world for the Mayweather fight, and Josecito Lopez is the most deserving fighter in the world for the Canelo fight. I mean, what have those guys done outside that Robert hasn't done, you know? So that's just my observation, you know?
Absolutely. And you know what? You have the right to be upset. And I'm going to tell you this, okay? And I've said this numerous times on Leaving the Ring. I get so amazed in how many publicists and how many managers and, you know, Cedric said that talk to me and go, Dave, don't say this, though. Don't tell anybody you were talking to me. And I know a lot of people that are involved with Golden Boy that are not happy with Golden Boy. You know, they're really not happy with them. We've had managers on Leaving the Ring when they discuss Golden Boy and they discuss the way they've been moved and the way that they're kind of put in the back seat. They're kind of thrown in the back of the bus. They're not happy about it. They're not being upfront and saying we're not happy with it, but you can hear it. We're not happy.
Yeah.
Robert's guys that have been treated like a stepchild, a second citizen. You know, this kid does bring boxing skills. He does bring excitement, you know. But I'll go back and talk about the way he's been promoted. I don't know if you're from the Bay. I'm from the Bay, and I go down to San Jose as much as I can. And I got to tell you, I don't see once a billboard about this fight. I didn't hear, you know, 97 Point Wild talk about this fight. I didn't hear anything that involves the sport of Guerrero and boxing in the mix in the Bay Area. Strikeforce, I see it all over the damn place. But what about the Ghost? That, to me, is a major problem, and we've been tackling that here on Leaving the Ring. And, you know, a lot of people come at us and say, well, you guys are just being haters and you're being this towards Golden Boy. But that's not necessarily true at all. We're just pointing out facts. And people
I don't consider you guys haters. I'm with you guys when you guys talk about Golden Boy. You know, look what they're doing to Lara. Look what they're doing. I mean, you can go on and on, I'm pretty sure. You know,
It's an interesting fight, and Robert is a guy that I think is good for the sport. He's well-spoken. You know, he's a good-looking dude. He has integrity. I think his family story is something. I don't think he would want to use it promotionally, but it's a fabric. It's a major fabric in who he is. It displays his character. You know, I got to write his – when he was given that article or that award.
Award,
you know, excellence,
right.
In courage. He exemplifies that to me, you know, and for him to win, you know, and get the title, I think it's good for boxing, particularly for the Bay Area. And it's one of those things where I wish companies would cross promote, because can you imagine the kind of tickets if you did the combination of, say, Andre Ward and Robert Guerrero, or which is a possible cross promotion, or Nonito Donaire in that mix with Robert Guerrero and Andre Ward, but you did those fights in the Bay Area. Or even just did a series where they're all those two promoters, even if they didn't do it on the same card, would work to build that area. We'll do Nonito Donaire fights in the Bay Area if you guys do X amount of Robert Guerrero fights in the Bay Area or Andre Ward fights in the Bay Area. And we actually turn that into, you know, from Oakland to San Jose, into like a major fight region. And you develop talent there. You got Mercito Gesta, who's another guy that could fight, you know, in the Filipino community. There's a major market there that's not being addressed.
No, it's not.
Let's
put it this way.
I like Robert.
Well, I love Robert, you know, and let's put it this way. Guerrero throws the first pitch for the A's game, which a lot of Bay Area guys are going nuts about the A's winning right now. And I'm at work, I mentioned it to the, you know, a bunch of A fans. I go, oh, did you see when Robert threw the first pitch? None of them knew who he was. But yesterday, they start talking about Nonito Donaire. They don't really know who he is, but they were saying, like, oh, yeah, you know, A's commentator and so-and-so, they were talking about Nonito Donaire. And I'm like, come on, Golden Boy. What are you doing? Why are you allowing the bus to drive by? You know?
I agree. I think, you know, they're superstar focused. They focus on their superstars, and guys, they think they can make superstars. I think that's where they go wrong. You know, boxing can use guys like Roberto Guerrero. I mean, not to use his story to promote himself, but I mean, you know, you got guys like Juan Guzman that you just recently said that he didn't make weight, and he said because of his mother was dying or something like that. I mean, Guerrero has come into weight every single time. He's professional. He's great for the sport, you know.
Mm-hmm. Articulate, he speaks well, you know. I mean, he's on towards another guy, you know. They're very good for the sport, but unfortunately,
I think his little breaks have killed him, though. And like Linus on Twitter has pointed that out. He has had some stretches. It isn't really Golden Boy's fault, you know. The injury, he took some time off just to be with his wife, which is again understandable. But there's been kind of almost the way Nonito Donaire, every time he built momentum, those were self-inflicted wounds, but that same kind of disjointed momentum, I think, has kind of hurt Robert. For a guy that's a multi-divisional titleist at the world stage level, to not be more recognized, he speaks English and he's Mexican, you know, he's a good dude on top of it. Like, he should be bigger than he is. More people
absolutely
should know who he is.
Definitely,
you know?
Absolutely.
He's also been in the smaller weight classes, though, too. Now he's entering the big boys, and this is where you can really market him.
And
you
that's
know?
Exactly what I was going to say. That's where you could really market him and see exactly does he fit what he's been saying all along, that he deserves in the bigger divisions? And let me get this across, too, really quick. You know, I know a lot of folks would be like, but this is the business. This is how business works. This is how it does this. As a fan, I speak as a fan, I don't care about the business. That's like me going to the dentist, and I have a toothache, and I need something done, and the dentist is like, well, I don't have the right drill, or I don't have the right painkiller. I don't care about that. I pay you to do something. It's a service. Now serve up. That's just the bottom line. But
yeah.
Let me ask you, Alex, are you heading out to the HP? Are you in the Bay Area, brother?
No, I'm not in the Bay Area. I'm actually from Miami.
Orale. All right, man. Cool. Well, there's good. That's great that there's a Robert the Gross fan out over there in Miami, man.
Yeah, definitely. I saw him box the shoes off of. I mean, I know he was a little older, but still was a great. Is a and Joel Casamayor, you know, and he won me as a fan. He won me over as a fan there.
Right,
but he's just, you know, he's a solid fighter. It's gonna be interesting to see too. You know, at welterweight, you know, Floyd. He's picking up his interim belt to kind of position himself with the Floyd fight. And the WBC has different rules depending on who you are. If you're one of their stars, you know, they give you preferential treatment. I don't think I see the move that they're making, but I don't see it working. You know, I don't think that Floyd's going to get forced to take any fight he doesn't want to. Maybe he sees a Robert Guerrero fight as one he can take, you know, because the landscape always changes. A guy gets a belt, then it matters, you know. And you look at Floyd's options, and he can kind of fight anybody he wants to, but who really has, you know, the lowest risk for the highest reward for him? That's always the key. What can he sell? It'll be interesting to see. You know, it'll be interesting to see if the WBC doesn't start forcing mandatories on Robert when they never really forced mandatories on Floyd or Manny Pacquiao, any of the stars. You know, Canelo hasn't fought a mandatory in over a year. You know,
right.
And he probably won't. It's just, you know. Yeah.
really quick, you know, got to put a plug out there. Unfortunately, we had this show. This show's been falling off, and it's, you know, on, you know, here and there, and doesn't scare away our sponsors. The Glen Tavern in Historical Landmark in Santa Paula. Want to give him a shout out. We're going to be staying there for our live broadcast in Ochsner, California. So thank you very much for sponsoring our first segment, our first live segment for me and Gabriel and the whole team of Leaving in the Ring. Let's continue on. Hey, Alex, thanks for calling in, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Keep the good show going.
Hey, we will, brother.
Thank you, man. Appreciate that. Yeah, good call.
All right.
Steve said actually he'll come back if he's done with his story now.
Oh yeah, let's throw it back on Steve, man. I mean, like, you know,
we were just getting rolling, and then all of a sudden
we were getting rolling, you know, and then my internet
blackout
over here. That's what happens when you don't pay the bills here, you know.
You have no, I know, you have no internet. Dave Chen has the number. Can he call him in? I don't know how your kid's newfangled Skype works. So I can't, like, text you the number.
My internet's back up. I'm on Skype now, you know, and it's been staying true to me for the last couple of minutes. So
I don't see you. We're not connected. We're not on the same call. Oh, you've got Steve's number.
Hello.
Boom.
Hold on, man. Well, you know what? I know Richard Schaefer hates us. I didn't even go far as to cut us off the radio. Wow.
Yep, and you know, he's got power. When we talk about power, we were saying about Heyman's power. Schaefer's got a lot of power. He was able to disconnect us.
Yeah. So what's going on, fellas?
Oh, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and
can't remember exactly where you were about to make a point, and then we got cut off.
Yeah. By the way, guys, I will say this right now. In all fairness to Golden Boy, I like the card they have this weekend. I think the main event can be a lot of fun, because the one thing about Robert Guerrero, he has not been a very consistent fighter. He has never really put on back-to-back strong performances.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always thought that he had a lot of physical talent, never really fought towards his strength, which is tall, lean frame, from the outside, you know, controlling airspace. And such a guy likes to be inside, so he's going to put on a lot of pressure from the beginning. I think that has a chance to be a very, very fun fight.
I do too. I mean, I like the Sean Porter add-on with Alfonso Gomez fight. Even the undercards are not that shabby at all. I think it's going to be a great night for San Jose, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know what's going on. You know, I just finished up my story on Raymundo Beltran, who takes on the very talented Hank Lundy. Guys, are you in agreement? And I was on Twitter, and most people seem to be, that as talented as Adrian Broner is, I think at 35, there needs to be a significant fight here. And the comparisons to Mayweather and Broner, I think, are very premature based on who they faced at 130. It's not even a comparison. But if Lundy looks impressive tomorrow, that's the guy I want HBO to say, hey, Adrian Broner, you got to fight that guy on October 6th in Atlantic City.
I agree 100%. I think that's a nice fight. What about, we was talking about earlier, I mean, do you think he's even going to stop at 135, or is he going to continue on to 140? Is it a case with Broner where he missed the weight so badly at 130, his body is just telling him, you know, you've got to move up significantly? That, to me, is kind of a key. I think he'll stay at 135. DeMarco Molina, that winner is kind of interesting to me. But I don't think DeMarco physically can deal with him. I think Lundy can physically deal with Broner at 135. He's got speed. He's got power. He's got the experience of a loss, and he's come back from it better. I like that opponent.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing about people say he may not be able to make 35. Guys, he didn't even try to make 130. We don't know exactly what his weight class or what threshold he needs to be at right now. I mean, last week was record-setting, guys.
Right.
Just think about it. When was the last time you saw a guy miss two weigh-ins at 130 and 140 in two separate
right.
weight classes? That's historic. I mean, even Brandon Rios didn't do that. And you know what's funny, guys? All these people that say it didn't matter. Guys, I've talked to fighters and trainers and nutritionists the last several days, and I always ask them, are those last three, four rounds the toughest? And they say, yes, it absolutely is the toughest, and it takes something out of you. Now, Vicente Escobedo, was he a heavy underdog at any weight, under any condition? Yes.
Right.
However, with that being said, his one window, or it may have been a small sliver of a window of opportunity, was about, if you can't make weight, I'm going to fight a weight-drained guy. And I've seen guys who lose the fight in the process of making weight.
Wait.
And I don't want to hear from people that have never done this. Well, they both weighed in the same at about the same weight as they stepped into the ring. I think those people are completely misguided or just willfully ignorant or Adrian Broner fans. The bottom line is that the process that you go through going into the last 3 weeks when you start to cut back your food, your water intake, which is a mistake a lot of guys make, you start going into the sauna with plastics, and really starving yourself for at least 72 hours. Freddie Roach says, Steve, you can make the weight, but you don't really even recover in 24 hours. And I thought that was the thing that was going to have Escobedo in this fight, that if he had any chance, he had to fight a diminished version of Adrian Broner. And simply at that point, once he knew that wasn't going to happen, he was basically coerced into taking a lot more money, as funny as that sounds.
How much do you think, though, took out Escobedo, not with just the weight issue, though, Steve? I mean, because the stress of going back and forth of negotiations, how much of that do you think took it out of him? I mean, to me, it just seems like the whole, you know, you're hyped up, you're ready to go, you're going to try to get a title, but then you get this big load of, it's not going to happen, it is going to happen, it's not going to happen, it is going to happen. That, to me, just kind of kills the whole chance of trying to be motivated to walk in the ring.
Well, Dave, I don't want to go all Teddy Atlas here, but, you know, this game, a lot of it is psychological. And see, here's the thing. I think, in my opinion, the whole time Team Escobedo knew they were going to have to fight because, quite frankly, they weren't the ones guaranteed an HBO date. And you know the way this business works.
Right.
If Escobedo walked away and did the right thing or the principled thing, everyone would have came down on him as if he was the perpetrator of the crime. That's how mixed up this business could be. And people would have said, you should have fought, blah, blah, blah. And you know that the A side is Broner. They're going to make it up to him one way or the other. And the pressure was then on the representatives led by Rolando Arellano for Escobedo to be put into an unfair fight, but in the most favorable of terms. So then basically you're negotiating an unfair fight where you know you're going to lose.
Right.
And all you had to do was really look at the reaction of Vicente Escobedo. I think he was emotional because the money is great, and that's what you fight for. You are a prize fighter. But if you're a competitor and you care about your career and your legacy and what you do in the ring, fighters want to win titles. This is a big opportunity for them. And I think you're right, Dave. If Broner would have acted in a professional manner and actually tried to make weight and he's struggling, you can see the guy emaciated, he looks like he's starving and he's on his feet and he's wobbling, and he gets to 131, he says, and then at that point, if you're Escobedo, you get excited. You're like, oh, my God, this is exactly the Broner I want
right.
to face. But if you're facing a Broner who's literally drinking water, the second he steps off the scales, and from what I'm hearing, is in a restaurant eating less than an hour before that weigh-in, you know, at that point, I have no chance of winning.
Yeah.
So psychologically, yeah, that absolutely wears on you, in my opinion.
You know, when people come up to me they email us and they say, do you believe boxing is fixed? And I have to kind of reference this fight here. This is what I would consider a fixed fight. Escobedo was walking into a fixed fight knowing him and his team, they were going to lose.
Yes. I say here's the issue that I have. Was Vicente Escobedo going to win that fight? Most likely not, but he has a small window of opportunity. And if the odds were 10-1, at that fight being where both fighters 17 hours or so prior weigh in at 130, he's a 10-1 underdog. Fine. Adrian Broner basically making himself into a welterweight, that became a 1,000-1 fight. That's the
exactly.
point I don't think people understand. And as I go to these different gyms, whether it's the Azteca gym, whether it's the Wild Card or Maywood, when I ask fighters, does it really matter as long as you weigh the same the night of the fight if one guy doesn't try to make weight? And you should see the fighter's reaction. I mean, they just roll your eyes and say, are these people crazy?
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't want to hear from people that have never done it to say it didn't matter. It matters. Why not? Then don't have weigh-ins.
Wait.
Don't have weight classes. It absolutely matters.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Absolutely does matter.
Do we start going back to the same day weigh-ins, do you think? Is this going to be one of the catalysts?
I think that genie's out of the bottle. See, because then you have a safety issue of being able to rehydrate. But see, what happened is in my opinion, that people started to exploit the rehydration into actually creating separate weight classes, the weight that
right.
you make and the weight you actually fight at. I don't know what the solution is. Also, for the bigger fights, Gabe, and we've been there, Dave, that day before weigh-in is used as a marketing tool.
Right.
I mean, you get it beamed up to the satellites, all the local stations and ESPN, they show it, they do satellite feeds. You can't do that the morning of the fight. And I think this is largely a byproduct of fighters not fighting enough and not making weight properly or being out of shape. And so this is a much larger discussion. But unfortunately, guys, I believe unless it's one of those fights where you have a catch weight, I think the days where you weigh in, let's say 12 hours or 8 hours before a fight, I think those are officially done.
Yeah.
I think those have been put away into the broom closet along with the 15-round fight.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and we're going to get 67-minute breaks now between rounds. Yeah, it's true. It's all kind of marketed. It's all built around television and how you can market. The fact that we're down to 12 as opposed to 15 rounds, we fit better
mm-hmm.
on TV. And everything's got to be a 12-round fight or a title fight because, you know, John Q, I don't know, the first thing about boxing needs that. They need to feel like somebody's winning something special. You know, same reason that CompuBox puts up the numbers on HBO because the guy that doesn't know anything about boxing needs to know what the score is because he doesn't understand the subtleties of judging. It just seems like there's so many things that we need to clean up in the sport. Do you have a final prediction for Guerrero versus Aiden? How do you think it's going to go?
Oh, I got to tell you, officially, you know, when we were doing TNR, I said Guerrero. I have to tell you, you might as well call me Lego My Ego. I'm flip-flopping here. I think it's a good fight, which I like. This is the thing that I like. Some people have, like, kind of ripped this fight. I disagree. Robert Guerrero usually, because of his strengths and weaknesses, makes for pretty good TV. And Celtic Hayden seems to have a chip on his shoulder. And again, guys, Robert Guerrero's never had a real fight above 135. That is an issue. He is moving up a full 12 pounds. He's coming off of a very bad rotator cuff tear in his left hand, and he has not fought since April. So those tangible factors, I think, are going to make a difference here. Now, is there going to be home cooking? Is Celtic Hayden on enemy turf? Absolutely he is. But I think it is a real fight. And I'm going to stick with my original prediction, Guerrero, but I think it's going to be a real, real tough fight tomorrow night, or Saturday night, actually.
You know, with Guerrero, his last name speaks for it, and, you know, in Spanish, it's Warrior. We've seen him bloody all up. I expect him to really put a show in San Jose. You know, I don't expect him to disappoint. I think that Adrian's going to bring out the best. Like I said before, to me, this is a real test of whether or not Guerrero belongs in these heavier divisions, you know. Hey, you know what? I'm checking out our switchboard, and it looks like we have Team Guerrero on the line that wants to speak about Saturday night fight. I don't know if you guys mind if we patch him in.
I don't
know. It's your show, guys.
Yeah,
all right. I'm just a guest guy, that's all.
Let's put on Ruben. What's up, brother? You're on live right now, leaving the ring with myself, Dave Duenas, Gabriel Montoya, and our family member, brother, Steve Kim.
What's going on, man? Just kicking it back here. Feet's kicked off. Drinking a beer at the porch right now. 35 miles away from San Jose before we get to work.
There you go, man. There you go.
Yeah.
So tomorrow's the way in.
Hey, I want to break an issue on that part. The layoff, rotator cuff. He's been inactive. He hasn't put on the weight. If you guys were at the press conference yesterday, Robert made Aiden. Look like a featherweight, and Robert looked like the middleweight up there. Robert's size is bulk. His height is about 4 inches higher. His reach is like another 5 inches, and his body stamina. If you would have seen him at the open workout, you guys would have been, wow, this is Guerrero. This is a whole different Robert Guerrero that's coming to the table due to the fact that his wife is healthy. He doesn't have the issues or the fact that he's worrying about her, being sick, fighting a fight, 65-50% there mentally, his strength, you know, all that. All that boils in the fact that that's what people put back on the back burner, saying that he hasn't been in a big fight. Not only that, because he's been a dangerous fighter that nobody would accept the fight for him. Now Robert has to go look for a fight. We called out some guys. We called out some big names that, he's a big boy. And Dave, you know, you stood right in front of him. He's a big boy. And now
right.
At 147, he's even bigger. You know, he's bigger, and his speed is still there, and his power is more hard. I've seen him in those mitts. Now, that rotator cuff ain't no problem. I mean, he's hungry. He is so hungry, man. I mean, it just...
I don't think there's any question of whether or not he's hungry. There's no question of whether or not he may look good. I mean, I don't know if Gable or Steve will agree with me. You can look great on the outside, but it's the inside that's going to count. And I think that's what most people are curious about, Ruben. That's what I'm curious about. I'm going to be there Saturday.
Yeah.
I want to see. I mean, because you can look like a heavyweight, but it doesn't necessarily mean you could fight like one.
That's the thing. You're absolutely right about that. You know, it's Robert's focus is there. You know, the guy motivated him more that Cindy was going to break his jaw, for one thing. You know, that's all Robert needed was to get himself prepared for this fight and then made himself mentally strong. So, you know, I look at it as that it's going to be a tough fight regardless. It's going to be a really tough
right.
fight. But, you know, this is what we need. You know what I mean? This is what's going to prove that he belongs in 147-pound division after Saturday night's verdict. You know what I mean?
How long after the injury did Robert was he cleared to go hard in the gym? How long of a period of time have you guys taken to adjust him weight wise to welterweight? Are those two things connected? I mean, did you basically just know we're not going to fight at 140 or 135? We're going to welterweight, and let's just gear towards that. Has that been the plan all along?
No, we're gearing for 140. They're going to get a title at 140. Amir Khan turned it down. I mean, numerous other fighters. Morales turned it down. I mean, DeMarco turned it down. A lot of guys turned my brother down. Because he's a southpaw, he's a fast southpaw. And due to the fact that after the surgery, he was cleared within 8 months. He was ready. He was back in the gym. He was still doing his road work while he was doing his sessions, therapy, and all that stuff. I mean, his therapist for his shoulder, she had him right on the ball, right on the stick. 5 weeks, 6 weeks after his surgery, he was ready back on the horn. So he hasn't been out of shape. he's been in shape. He's been in the gym. But he wasn't in the gym as hard as he should have been the last 3 months that he's been. So once he got a fight date, that's when he opened up 100%.
Good to hear. Good to hear.
Steve, did you have any questions?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, why didn't you guys maybe take that fight? I know you guys were offered the fight on May 5th on the Mayweather-Cotto undercard against Malignaggi. Why not take that fight? And then it seems to be enough downtime from May 5th to July 28th. How close did you guys come to accepting that offer?
You know what? What happened was the team, you know, from what I'm hearing from the Europe, is HBO didn't accept it, for one thing. They said, no, we're not going to take that fight. Paulie was running amok, saying, putting my brother down, saying, you know, he's looking for big fights. I'm a guy for him. You know, we know Paulie. Paulie's good people with us. He's still a good friend of mine. But, you know, when it comes to fight time, it's not our decision to who's going to make the fight or who's going to push the ring. The promoter says, okay, let's do it. If the matchmaker says, let's do it, we're going to do it. Robert was going to back down. He said, I'll take the fight, regardless or not. But it's the fact that HBO turned a twist that they denied the fight, and Golden Boy put a twist of their own saying, Rob, you want to take the fight, which was not there. Rob is not afraid to fight anybody. Like you said, he wanted to be the best or be the best with anybody. You know, if Paulie was the guy at 140 at the time or 135, then it would have been Paulie. But it's you know, politics. It's politics due to the promotional company.
Okay, understood.
Yeah. Ruben, I will definitely see you, man, Saturday. I got your number locked down, and I'll hit you up when I get over there in San Ho, brother.
And I'd love to be there, but, you know.
All right, you guys have a good one. You guys are going to see you guys Saturday night.
All right, brother. Keep the beers cold for me, man.
Best of luck.
All right, brother.
That was actually one of the fights I had tagged this summer for me to attend. So, oh well. Can't wait to watch it on TV.
Planning, and tell me if this is a bad idea here, Steve, is that I'm actually planning to put on a Gabriel Montoya mask and go to the fight to see what
happens.
You
know what? At that point, you better look for a good sports bar. you may have your credential pulled real fast.
Right. Yeah, I know. You know, I'm being blocked by association on Twitter. Why not get my credentials pulled at the fights, you know?
Steve,
and by the way,
be,
it's going to be interesting, guys, in terms of, like, what's going on with the media. And Schaefer seems to be burning a lot of bridges more than General Sherman going through Atlanta in the Civil War. It's going to be interesting to see what happens on September 15th. From what I understand, he is kind of like taking a look at who's going to which show, almost as like an act or a pledge of loyalty. You know, as it relates to my partner, Gabe, I don't think you have a choice here, and you're not going to go to the Canelo Alvarez fight. It'll be interesting to see just how many media members actually go to the Canelo fight. I know they may have the better card top to bottom in terms of what takes place before the main event, but I think it's very hard to say that, hey, if you are a media outlet, whether it's just a boxing blog or a smaller website or a bigger publication, I don't see how you can't go or don't go to Martinez Chavez right now.
Right.
But we'll see what happens that day. It'll be interesting.
Do you think it's going to be a battle of the undercards in order to try to sell?
No, because when it's all said and done, guys, what really sells the pay-per-view or what really drives the headlines is the main event. I mean, if you really look at some of the major pay-per-view shows, your top 15 to 20, guys, they didn't exactly have Revenge the Rematches in terms of undercards. I mean, some of the biggest Oscar De La Hoya numbers had Butterbean and Mia St. John. I remember I had to sit through that crap.
Right.
And you know what's ironic, guys? When people say, oh, Golden Boy and Top Rank need to work together, their last couple of pay-per-view shows, their undercards were some of the worst things I've ever seen. At that point, I think they kind of needed to chill out from each other, to be honest with you. You know, I think what happened, I'll say this, I think Golden Boy is more willing to make better fights within their own stable. Top Rank's philosophy is more like, we're going to use these slots to develop guys, and we're not going to put them in wars. So there is a definite philosophical conflict between the two companies. And I give Golden Boy credit. I like what they're doing on that undercard. There still isn't that fourth fight It's going to be announced probably next week. And I think what they have done with that card, I think Gonzalez, Ponce de Leon, if that was on Boxing After Dark, there'd be no objections from me. Madonna, Soda Cross, I think is a very intriguing fight. By the way, guys, I like Soda Cross. He just looks way too big for Madonna.
I was going to say that. Yeah, he's a big yep. He's a big kid. Really big
third,
kid.
In that third undercard fight, I don't know. But right now, you know, Top Rank has Alvarado against Katsidis, which is a great fight in 2009. Last I checked, it's 2012. And then, you know, Guillermo Rigondo, who... Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. And then Guillermo Rigondo might fight Roberto Marachini, which kind of looks like Marachini is cashing out his own career. And then Joachim Alcin is going to fight Matthew Macklin in a fight that is... Lou DiBella's slot on that card. So, you know, that's not exactly what I'd call a robust card. But, you know, we'll see what happens. But history has shown it is the main event that drives the engine.
Yeah, without question. I like that Seth Mitchell-Jonathan Banks fight also. I mean, the Golden Boy card is a solid if you're going to go to the first fight, which nobody at casinos ever does, and watch it from top to bottom, you're going to see some quality fights. And they do have a philosophy, almost like the UFC, where losses, they're trying not to make them matter as much within their own stable. That like, their guy gets knocked out, you know, Amir Khan's going to be back in another fight. They're already, you know, starting to talk about his next date when he's coming back. They're trying
Which
to train the
thing.
Fans in a good
right.
way. I think it's a great thing. Yeah, I'm not completely down on them. I wonder how it goes for their better longevity, though. They're going to have some pretty beat-up stars in a few years.
Yeah, you know, but fights are what we want. And in a perfect world, I tweeted this a couple days ago, I take the top-ranked main event with the Golden Boy undercard.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
talking about earlier when you weren't on is the idea of developing regions together. Golden Boy and Top Rank don't necessarily need to do cards together, but they could agree to kind of develop a region. And I thought of, you know, Mercedo Gesta and Donaire in the Bay Area is a large Filipino group there. And you've got Golden Boy, who could do the same thing with Robert Guerrero, maybe even throw Goosen in the mix to help develop the Bay Area with Andre Ward. You could get regular cards and kind of all talk to each other how we're going to attack this and help boxing as a whole as opposed to themselves. But, that's not really going to happen. Because
right. That means divide the pie. You know, they're not none of these guys want to do that.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, listen, I got to run here. It was a lot of fun. Let's do this again soon.
All right, Steve. Thanks for calling it.
Thanks a lot, guys. See you later, Gabe.
Yeah, Fight Fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598, you certainly can. Speak to us here on Leaving the Ring, 3 hours of boxing talk. Myself, Dave Duenas, and my co-host.
I can't tell if Dave's gone again. Every time he gets quiet, I get scared. Lucky for us, I brought up the fight schedule. So we'll just move right into that. 7:30, it's usually about the time we begin to do it. I imagine Dave will return at some point. So here we are, July 27th, Friday, 2012, at the Resorts Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey, on ESPN2's Friday Night Fights. You have Hammer and Hank Lundy, 22-1-1, versus Raymundo Ray Beltran, 25-6. This is for the Ring Magazine, number 8 lightweight versus unranked. I don't even know why I said that out loud. For me, I like Hank Lundy in this. You know, Raymundo Beltran is a solid, quality guy. He's been Manny Pacquiao's sparring partner for a number of years. Probably his
Anyways,
oldest sparring.
Back. I don't know what happened. I hit the button by accident. That didn't get dropped off. I was just seeing that if Steve was off, and then I end up hitting the thing. But really, really quick,
you're just beating me up.
I'm beating you up.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on next, Dave. You keep leaving me. You know I have abandonment issues.
Glenn Tavern in historical landmark in Santa Paula is going to be representing us. I mean, sponsoring us our whole stay in Oxnard, California for our live broadcast show. I want to say a quick thank you to them. Also, a quick thank you for Mob Scotch, who's representing Leaving the Ring now. Now, just to make it clear, what our opinions and our views do not reflect on them, okay? Because they do have a large variety of clients, and we don't want people to think that they speak the same lingo that we do, you know. So our views and our take in boxing are solely leave it in the ring.
For people that are listening, explain exactly what we're going to be doing and where next week, Dave. We probably want to let the audience know before we do our live broadcast. I'm excited about it.
I am. I'm really excited about it. It's something that we've been talking about doing for quite some time, and we also have other things in the works with this live broadcasting. Now, we talk about live broadcasting. That we're doing it live right now, but the only difference is that you cannot see us. You can't see the guests. We're going to be doing it on Ustream. So you're going to be able to listen to us on Blog Talk, but at the same time listen to us on – and you're going to be able to watch the show on Ustream. And then what we're doing is we're going to be visiting gyms. We're going out to the gyms. We're trying to give back to the boxing community. We're trying to give, you know, exposure to these gyms that produce fighters that solely entertain us, that feed back to the sport. And I believe, and Gable believes, that that's the way we should do things, is by, you know, giving them their spot and their time and their limelight of these hidden gyms, these gyms that don't get that exposure, that need money because they survive solely on people coming in, walking through those doors to pay and keep their doors open. So what better way can we repay back these guys that really take away from their families and their life of giving back to the sport, which is develop kids or teenagers or young adults and cross them over to the pros so that we have entertainment value in our sport. So we feel this is a great way of giving back to them, get them the exposure, get some interviews, but at the same time have some fighters come down to their gyms and we sit down and we do a live interview with whoever is willing to sit down with us live on Ustream and on Leaving the Ring Blog Talk here. So that's what it's all about. So hopefully people are going to like it, people are going to enjoy it, and they're going to want to see more and more of what we're deciding to do here. You know what I mean, Gabe?
What's going to be interesting is they get a chance also to see you disappear in a different dimension during the show, leaving me completely alone to keep talking and rambling and try to keep the show.
I'm going to really throw people off by when I put on my dark cloud mask, and they're going to think, like, there's two Gabriel Montoyas?
That's true. That's going to be fun. I need to send you like a – my dad used to have this cardboard cutout that somebody made of him, one of those like life-size stand-up things. He would put it different places and people would take photos with him. And it looked – you know, it was a picture of him. It looked just like him. And from far enough away, he actually thought he was there like waving at you and smiling. I need to get you one of those and just bring it with you for press row. Like a blow-up me. Kind of freak out. Richard Schaefer, how did he get in here? Brown shirts, take him away. If you want, I can get into the. I had started the weekend fight schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and if you guys are anywhere in Southern California, Oxnard or whatever, Santa Paula, hey, come on down to Extreme Boxing Gym. That's where we're going to be at. They're very kind. You know what? They're kind enough to allow us to do our first show there. We're going to be in Oxnard again. We're working on that show, and then possibly in San Diego or somewhere else. We don't know. We don't know where we're going to end up at. The whole thing is, though, is that we're planning to do this at least once or twice out of the month here on Leaving the Ring. Because, too, at the same time, we want to give back our listeners some stuff, you know, give them back some entertainment value from us, too. You know, they tune in. They're loyal to us. They tune in every Thursday. Give them a little something, too, to look forward to of seeing something live and see us sit across, an upcoming fighter or one of their favorite fighters. And also get to see whether or not, because, you know, we've had two people hang up on us so far here on Leaving the Ring due to questions. We've even had a few people shy away from us of us doing interviews because they go, "No, you guys' questions are too much." I want to see if somebody gets up and walks away from us, Gabriel.
Well, I've actually already got a strategy all planned for that. It's a different style of interview, but I'm offering – I do very good massage. So while I'm giving you stress from questions, I will rub your shoulders and neck. You know,
I'm going to be wearing a headgear. Let me tell you that. And the body protection from toe – they don't make those yet, but from toes all the way up to the neck. So I just let people know that. I mean, hey, we're brave, but we're not dumb.
Okay, you know, it's like a stress relieving while giving you stress. That's what I'm trying to go for. Yeah. And women, I do a full massage, but the men only shoulders and neck, just to calm me down.
End?
Most people.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
With
no happy ends. Never happy ends. However, we will be staying at the Glen Tavern Inn. We'll give out the rooms later. Yeah, I'm excited to go up to Oxnard. There's a lot of listeners that are out of the Oxnard area, and people are already asking me about it on Twitter. It's going to be fun. I think it's going to be a bit of a party when we go up, and you know, because we're going to be staying the night, hanging out after the show, I think before the show as well. And then, you know, obviously we'll probably have a little bit of an audience there watching us do the show. It's going to be fun. This will be something
very
different.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Same time.
Yeah.
You know, if anybody's wondering what the time we're going to be there, the show does start at 5 o'clock. It's going to be 3 hours of boxing talk like usual. There's going to be a meet and greet with some of the fighters that we're doing interviews with. So come out, enjoy, hang out with us, and, you know, just talk boxing, have a brewski, whatever the case is. If you don't have a beer, if you don't drink, well, they'll have water there at the Extreme Boxing Gym. It's a really nice gym, too. I haven't been there, but I've seen tons of pictures. Really beautiful gym. It should be a lot of fun, you know, a lot of fun. So be sure to come out and support these gyms. You're not supporting the show because, like I said, let's give back to these gyms. Come out and support these gyms that are doing their best to produce fighters for our sport.
And there's a rumor already circulating out there that Juan Manuel Marquez has retired. I have no idea if this is true, but it's being floated out there right now. Kind of interesting. I kind of like that there was another fight, too, that was announced today. It was solidified for, I believe it was September 1st, is Gennady Golovkin versus Gregor Sproxa at the Turning Stone Casino in Verona, New York. It's going to be on HBO. Pirov was in, now he's out because he has a back injury. But this fight is replacing it. And, man, I got to tell you, that's going to be an excellent fight. I mean, Gennady Golovkin's a guy I've liked for quite some time and have watched him for quite some time. And it's nice to see him kind of finally come into his own and come to the fore. I think they've developed him nicely. I'd like to see him fight a little more often. But now he's just stepping up to the big boys. And Proxa, you know, he just avenged his loss to Kerry Hope this last week or a week before, but he's still a guy that's kind of flawed, but action enough that, and he can move and do different things. He can box a bit, he can punch a bit, he can take a punch. It's definitely going to be a challenge for Golovkin. So I'm really excited about that fight. The middleweight division, man, is getting sexy. It's getting sexier every day. As these guys get a little bit older, it's a little more dangerous. They get a little more experienced. Martinez, it used to be Martinez and everybody else, and now I think the gap is closing a little bit. And if you know Martinez, if he's able to get through Chavez Jr., he's going to have Gennady Golovkin probably waiting for him because I think he's going to beat Proxa. And Pirog is still in that mix. So I don't know. We'll see how that all plays out, but the middleweight division is going to be on fire. I think 140 is going to blow up too very shortly here. Let's get to that fight schedule, or do you want to take a caller? It's 7:42. We've got time.
Let's take on to the fight schedule because there is a lot of fights out there that we need to talk about, and it should be fun.
All right. I'll start all over again just because we were just at the first fight. Friday night at the Resorts Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey, Hank Lundy finally made weight. I think on his fourth try, Friday night fights, ESPN2, Henry Lundy, 22-1-1 versus Raimundo Beltran, 25-6. Beltran is the longtime sparring partner of one Manuel Pacquiao. Solid guy, 25-6. It's a, you know, he's kind of a journeyman's record. He's going to give you rounds. I think Lundy's really been putting it together lately. He really understands who he is. He's a nice blend of speed and power. He's a little chinny. But if he stays within himself, he'll get you out of there.
Exactly.
I think he gets Beltran out of there, like a TKO round eight.
You know, Beltran to me, even with his last fight, and I've said this many times, when you're a sparring partner, and, you know, and that's when your service is being used, sometimes you end up getting stuck there. You know, you don't end up bringing out the best of you because you end up going into that, you know, that third gear, which is cruise. And that could be a strong
possibility.
Yeah.
You mentally defer to the other guy, like always.
Exactly, you know, and Hank Lundy, though, to me, he's his worst enemy sometimes, you know. There's a guy who's very chinny, but he's really brave. He can be brave enough where this is where it's like a stupid bravery, in my opinion, you know, where he's doing fairly well and he's being, you know, he's boxing beautifully. And then all of a sudden, he decides to get overexcited and become brave. And that's where Beltran could probably be successful. I know that he's trying to get into Beltran's head. You know, he was on the boxing fix a couple weeks back, and, you know, he seemed very calm, and he kind of understood that that's what Hank Lundy is all about. And I think he's really banking on Hank Lundy to kind of foul up and trip so that he can land a good punch. Now, whether or not Beltran has the power to make some noise, the good thing about it is that he may have the power because Hank Lundy sometimes doesn't take a very good shot when you hit him on that certain point. But I'm going to go with Hank Lundy.
He could be waiting all night for that timing to take place. But to me, if your plan is waiting for another man to fail, you're
right.
Not going to succeed. And I think that he's going to be waiting all night, waiting too long. I think and he's a solid fighter, you know. And I think it would be an accomplishment for Lundy to stop him, and I think he does it. I think Lundy wants to make a statement. He's hungry. I am curious to see just how hungry he is after having to make weight, several times today and coming in over the limit. So that's interesting to me. But beyond that, I think he'll be fine tomorrow, and I think he takes out Beltran. But on the undercard there is Farah Ennis, 19-1 versus Richard Pearson, 11-2. You know, I lean towards Ennis. I don't have a lot of strong opinions about this fight, to be perfectly honest.
Nor do I.
So let's move to Saturday night, shall we? At the HP Pavilion, San Jose, California, you're going to be ringside for Showtime's Robert
Guerrero.
I don't
know if I'll be ringside, but I'll definitely be there. You know, it really depends.
Oh, I see. It's like that. Robert Guerrero, 29-1-1 versus Selkirk Aiden, 23-0. I'm going with Guerrero, but I think it could be a fight that's much closer than we expected. You know, I think it's a real fight. It's a good fight. I'm very curious about Guerrero at the weight. It's nice to hear that he looked good in the gym and that they kind of built towards this. I mean, my question to them was were you planning to move to 147? And they're saying, well, we had options at 140 that we wanted to explore. That makes me wonder, you know, how it was that they approached the conditioning of 147. You know, if you're doing it like Paul Williams, where you're always kind of wondering about, can I go back down to a weight class if I jump to this one higher? I'm not sure how solid it is. But, you know, they've always struck me as professionals. So I'm going to defer to them. I'm going with Guerrero by unanimous decision. I think Monday I said split decision, but I'm going unanimous.
I like Guerrero in this fight. I think this is a good pick. You know, when we do bag on Golden Boy, we need to point out the good that they do. And I think this was a really good matchmaking in terms of testing Robert at 147, finding out if he really belongs in that division, because he's been knocking at that door for him to move up in weight from his promoter. Adrian is definitely, we got to see what he's got cooking on Saturday night at the HB Pavilion. Robert, to me, it's nothing new for him to fight bigger guys, because a lot of the times when he's in San Jose or he's in Gilroy in his hometown sparring, he probably gets more of his sparring done with a collective fighters at 154, really not getting that work with smaller guys. You know, Robert's always had to spar bigger guys to get the work in. Adrian, not a whole lot of folks know about him, but I got to tell you this. This is going to be a fight. It's going to be a really dog fight. I'm curious what Guerrero we get in San Jose. The layoff, the injury, the moving weight, it can all spell for disaster, or it could spell for we got a new player at 147.
Yeah, I mean they're gambling big, you know, that we're all wrong. You know, like Ryan Bivens at Sweet Boxing, one of our favorite guys here. He just tweeted out, you know, Selkirk Aiden's a former Olympian. He's got 380 amateur fights. I imagine that's a winning
right.
record. You know, he's world title holder for a reason. you know. And a lot of people point out that JoJo Dan fight, and they didn't think he, you know, won it and this and that. But that's probably the one fight that they've seen. I'd be willing to bet that Ryan's
Well, see,
seen,
that's the one fight that I keep pushing that, you know, Robert can be pushed back. And Adrian,
yeah.
if he decides to act like an opponent rather than a champion, Robert's going to be in a lot of trouble. You know, because if Robert was able to be pushed back by a much smaller guy, what do you think is going to happen to a bigger guy? And we're not talking about height, none of that, the way, you know, Ruben Grill came on, the older brother Robert. We're talking about in size, though, you know, and weight. There's a weight difference here, you know, and if you're not – and I did mention, you know, earlier about the 154, you know, he did fight bigger guys, you know, but he was able to be more mobile than them. When you get bigger guys, you're able to, you know, when I get in spar and I go to the gym and I spar, I tend to like to spar with bigger guys because I'm able to really get away from danger a lot quicker. Their punches hurt a lot more, so that just tends for you to be more defensive-wise. And I think that's what a lot of fighters in smaller weight divisions, they do. They're able to use their footwork and work on that and able to really do pot shots so that they can learn how to time and learn their distance. But when you get a guy that is in the division you're working on, they're doing much of the same things. And if they're able to push you back, that's what to me, that's what comes in question. How is he going to do it against a guy that's 147, campaigns at 147, and could push you back when a guy that was campaigning at 130 was able to push you back? That's the curiosity I have.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I want to know if he's going to be the stronger guy, if he can be used to it. Like I said, you know, it's one thing to be training. It's another thing to be fighting. And I'm going to be very curious to see how he handles the weight and how he handles the punch of a bigger guy. Imagine he's sparred with a bunch of, you know, folks. But, again, it's the difference when that headgear comes off and what happens.
The headgear, the gloves, the atmosphere, the nerves. There's got to be a lot of nerves here. I mean, you know, for Robert the Ghost Guerrero, he's back in his hometown. And, you know, with that Jordan fight, left a lot of bad taste in a lot of people in his hometown, to tell you the truth. You know, I mean, he did redeem himself back on ESPN, but people don't forget about the HBO fight. You know, unfortunately, a lot of people didn't catch the ESPN when he redeemed himself. You know, they're going to be stuck on the HBO one. So,
right.
There's a lot of stake here for Robert. I take my hat off to Robert the Ghost Guerrero, you know, taking on such a hard fight with Adrian and doing it in his hometown, doing it in San Jose and Gilroy. It's gonna be electrifying, man. I got to tell you that. I mean, even with 3,000 or 4,000 fans probably going to be out there, it's going to be a party.
Yeah, it should be interesting. I mean, he basically has come out and said, look, you know, I want this, and everybody else is wrong. You know, I'm a welterweight, or I'm 140, and I should be fighting not only at that division, but the class of that division. All you dudes are wrong that are saying that I don't deserve that. Now he gets to prove us wrong, you know, prove himself right and prove everybody wrong and show us against a legitimate guy. You know, I think his style benefits Robert a bit. Robert's going to stick and move. He's more of a boxer. He's not going to have to kill himself to make weight. So we'll see what kind of energy level he's got
exactly.
At 147. Does it tire him out, or is he just fighting at optimum weight now? It's a very intriguing fight. I like that Robert kind of like took his destiny in his own hands and just said, I'm doing this. So,
I'm going to throw this out there really quick. Win or lose for Josecito Lopez, I love to see Josecito Lopez go up against with Robert the Ghost Guerrero at 147. I think that would be a fantastic match, great match. Both guys would be throwing a lot of punches and blows and stuff. And just to point out, too, really quick, after our show, on our live show on Thursday night, we'll be heading out to the Latino Comedy Club in Ventura. So after that show, hang out with us for a little bit and head out with us to the comedy club that they're also sponsoring the Thursday show for our first broadcast. Mob Scotch, man, they're just doing wonders for leaving the ring. But let's continue with that fight schedule here, Gabe.
Huh. I hope all that comedy's in Spanish. in support, Sean Porter, 19-0, versus Alfonso Gomez, 23-5-2. Welterweights in action. This is
good
an interesting fight.
Good fight. I like this fight. I really do.
Yeah.
Alfonso Gomez, man. We talk about Robert. That kid doesn't take a break. I mean, there's no in-between. There's no pauses in Alfonso Gomez's career. This guy just, he's willing to, if he's healthy, he's willing to take it.
Yeah. It's, I find it, it's just interesting. Alfonso is just a traveling man. He's a warrior. He will fight anybody. I mean, he is, he's a veteran of the show, The Contender, and it's, he kind of exemplifies that. A guy that just, he'll get in there with anybody, fine. You know, I'm not the favorite, that's all right. You know, the guy might have things that I don't have, that's cool. I'm going to go in there and get it done.
When he was introduced on The Contender, he was introduced as the underdog. And guess what? It hasn't changed. This guy is still the underdog. Sean Porter should have the upper hand. He's a younger guy. And Alfonso Gomez is an aging warrior. He's got a lot of miles on him. But at the same time, I wouldn't count him out. He's got a good right hand. He understands his abilities. He understands what he needs to do to capitalize on things. But he does get rocked. He does get caught. And he can fall short because of his speed. So Sean Porter, though, in a lot of ways should win. But at the same time, I won't be surprised if Alfonso Gomez is able to pull a victory at the HP Pavilion in San Jose.
Yeah, I think Sean Porter pulls it out. I like his.
I think so too.
I like his overall game. I think it's going to be a close fight, though. I think it's a fight that goes a distance. I think it's going to go rounds, and Alfonso's going to be there every step of the way. I think it should be a fun fight.
I think it's not
one of those ones, you know, that I make a big deal about a prediction on. I think Porter wins, but I think it's a solid fight. Also on the card is interesting.
I just don't want him to do that. I think that's a big, big mistake for Porter to try to go the distance, you know, to try to go all the full rounds and stuff with Alfonso Gomez. To me, Alfonso Gomez is a creeper. He's a guy that'll come in through the back door. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, as the fight goes on, he could get stronger. But, you know, I'd like to see what Porter's got going these days. You know, I want to see him in the back end of a fight. I always thought he was kind of like a raw project that he needs some rounds, he needs some polishing. I was never quite, people were really big on him there for a second, and then it kind of died off.
Right.
And, you know, looking at him now, like it seems like there's like a rebuilding process or a leveling off. I'm not sure. I can't tell which.
This is a pretty big rebuild though. I mean, he fell off. He really hasn't been that active.
No, he fought February against Andre Ajahu. That was his last big fight, and that was the 3D show. And then he fought back in April. He didn't fight for like a whole year, and I'm not exactly sure. He's like, what went wrong with him? But here he is, and it is a big step up in class.
It is a big step up in class, right? You know, I mean, I take in as that this kid should have been a lot further than where he's at this moment. And it could be a strong possibility that Alfonso Gomez may be getting a green Sean Porter, where in reality, Sean Porter should be more at the edge of entering his prime. So that's what makes this fight interesting, fun, and it could really, in my opinion, I'm picking Sean Porter, but I'm not that confident on that pick.
Yeah, it could turn. It is a fight that could turn. Also on the card is George Groves, 14-0, versus Francisco Serra, 25-5-1. George Groves is a prospect out of England, out of Hammersmith, London, to be exact. And he's a guy that I'll always be a fan of. He handed James DeGale his first loss, which was a really fun fight and kind of early for two kind of name prospects to be getting it on. He took out Paul Smith in two rounds handily back in November, and here he is now in action, finally in the middle of the year, in San Jose against Francisco Sierra. I don't really understand the move. I know he's got a fight in Wembley Arena set up for September 14th. I guess he's just staying busy.
He's going to be down. To tell you the truth, this is a prospect that we did an article about. Somebody that I've been, you know, we've been both been keeping our eye on. A lot of times when you see prospects in the UK, we never get a chance to see them live. I'm excited to see, George Groves live. You know, to really get a chance to see somebody that's been developed out of the UK come overseas. And this whole card, again, like I said, you know, it's a great card. When Golden Boy does things right, they do it right. But when they do it wrong, they do it wrong. So, you know, it's one of those.
They're really good at extremes. that's a nice spin on it. At the Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California, in Delafatura, Ronnie Rios takes on David Rodella, 18-0 versus 16-6-3. Is it that time for David Rodella?
It is that time. You know, Ronnie Rios is a really good fighter from the Espinosa Boxing Club, you know, camp, and I think they're doing the right thing. David Rodella is just he's cooked and he's overdone. Sad part about it is in boxing, these guys that's their permanent income. We're going to find out a lot about David Rodella, where he's at in stage wise of his career. Are we just speculating? Are we automatically jumping off the wagon of David Rodella? I'm going to say we're not. I think that he's done. He should probably hang him up. And with the performance with Ronnie Rios, we'll find out a lot more. Not taking nothing away from Ronnie. I think Ronnie's a great fighter. I think they're moving him up well and stuff. But if he blows out David Rodella really, really bad, then I think our answer is clear of what we think about David.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I like David. He's one of the cooler people to meet in boxing. He's just a genuine guy.
Yeah, really nice kid.
Always remembers you. Yeah, comes up and says, hey, what's up, and we'll talk. And I got to know him a little bit while I was training at Wild Card, and I just see him around. We always kind of stop and talk. And I worry about him. You know, he just hit a stretch. Like, once he lost to Eloy Perez, he just never really returned. You know, he got knocked out in his next fight, and then – you know, he won split decision, then it was a draw, then two losses in a row, you know, Lonnie Smith and Luis Ramos. And then he gets one win against a guy that he should have beat, you know, Baruel Cardenas, who was like 18-23 at the time. And then he gets knocked out in two by Terrence Crawford. And it was, from all accounts, a brutal knockout. I wasn't there for that one.
You know,
Steve
I'm not
was talking
a suspicious,
to me about it.
You know, I'm not a superstitious person. But let me throw something out there. There's one time a trainer, I can't remember the guy's name too, man, and hopefully he can hit me up and remind me his name. But one time he told me, you know, he would never allow his fighters to be sparring partners, or he would never allow his fighters to take a beating, to be outgunned in a sparring session, you know, or a smoker. He would make sure they always had the upper hand. And I asked him why, and he said, the fact is because – There's that saying is that once you cross over, then that's where you stay. And I think with David Rodella, if you really think about him, and you think about all the other sparring guys, they end up staying there. Look at Ray Beltran, who's a Manny Pacquiao, I mean still is, sparring partner, and David Rodella was a Manny Pacquiao sparring partner.
Right.
They don't seem to end up moving away from that area of being a sparring partner.
No, not really. You know, and that's why it was encouraging to see what they did with Ruslan Provodnikov. I imagine they'll ask him back. But he kind of made sure, you know, it was like this is a career decision to go and be Manny Pacquiao's sparring partner. They needed to change up the flavor and get people that would make him kind of come alive and fight a little more often because he was getting used to Raymundo Beltran and David Rodella as his sparring partners.
Right.
And so they brought him in, but Provodnikov was like a career move, and it rejuvenated him. And then he was, you know, we saw the result when he fought. Like, it really showed that he'd been fighting with one of the best fighters in the world. With these guys, though, yeah, by staying there, making that your job, you don't want to lose your job, so you kind of do it well.
To me, it just seems like they end up losing the best years of their lives staying
there.
Well,
you also mentally, yeah, and you mentally neuter yourself.
Right.
You know, it's not. You're giving other people work, and people aren't giving you work. That's a very big distinction.
Exactly.
I think Rodella, Ronnie Rios isn't a big puncher, so that also makes this a dangerous fight.
Exactly.
I could see a distance fight where Rodella
a lot of punches
mile, you know.
To the head.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of punches
I don't,
to the head. So there's a lot more punishment there. We're way over on our schedule.
Oh, we are.
Yeah, we're way wow. over and stuff. So. But I think that we owed it to the listeners to go over because of all the technical difficulties here in my office and my internet. But
yeah.
Do we have any more else? Because I got to head out. I got to get some dinner. I got to eat. I'm starving.
Let me finish this out. Julio the Kid Diaz is fighting on that other card. Yikes. At the Paramount Theater, Huntington, New York, Chris Algieri, 14-0 versus Raul Tovar, 10-5-1. At the Palomar, Chihuahua, Mexico, Orlando Salido, 38-11-2 versus Moises Gutierrez, 21-4. And Edgar Sosa, 45-7, takes on Shigetaka Ikehara, 22-3-2 at the Domo de la Fiera in Bion, Mexico. And finally, at the Ramatex in Windhoek, Namibia, Paulus Moses, 28-2 versus Cassius Bolaji, 37-6-1. And that is your weekend fight schedule. Yeah, I gotta get some food and recover from all the – I lost all my hair in that whole segment every time you dropped off.
There you go. Fight fans, be sure to tune in every Sunday night for the Boxing Fix at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. Noche de Boxeo every Monday night, same time, same place. Every Thursday night here on Leaving the Ring, be sure to tune in this Thursday, Thursday night at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern for our live, very first live broadcast in Ustream. And we will let people know the confirmed guests for Thursday next week when we get closer. Come out and hang out with us in Oxnard, California. Chill with the boys, the bad boys of boxing. That's what some people are calling us. We're not bad. I don't think we're bad, you know. But anyways, that's
I'm actually quite good. You should try me.
There you go. Anyways, don't drink and drive. Stay close to the family and relax, and we'll talk 3 hours boxing talk next week. Yeah, guys, have a good one.
Peace. Thank you.